Good morning, everybody. Welcome to our session this morning. As always, we'll begin with our invocation, and it's a pleasure to be able to introduce to you Bishop Bernard LaMarche of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. The bishop presides over a congregation of 340 members in the Dallas region. He's married to his wife Heidi, and they have six children. Thank you, Bishop, for being with us. Please rise for the invocation.
Our Father, as we gather together today, we recognize the great stewardship we have here in this Dallas area. We are grateful for the abundance we enjoy in this country and this land. We pray for peace. We pray that we may reach out to those who need a hand to be lifted. We pray that we might encourage, inspire, and teach those. We recognize this great responsibility we have. We pray and invoke thy blessing upon those in this room as we make decisions that affect the future of our community and of this Dallas area. We're grateful for this responsibility, take it very seriously, and we say these things in the name of thy Lord, Jesus Christ. Amen.
Amen. Bishop, thank you very much. Ms. Morgan, would you like to lead us the pledge?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic which stands, one nation, under God,
again, good morning, everybody. Madam Secretary, would you like to begin with speakers?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. We begin your speakers with Marvin Crenshaw, followed by Michael Machacek. I will first recite the speaker guidelines. Citizens and other visitors attending the meeting of the City Council shall observe the same rules of propriety, decorum, and good conduct applicable to members of the City Council. Any persons making impertinent, profane, personal, or slanderous remarks or become boisterous while addressing the City Council or while attending the City Council meeting shall be removed from the room if the Sergeant-at-Arms is so directed by the presiding officer, and the person shall be barred from further audience before the City Council during that meeting of the City Council. Again, your first speaker is Marvin Crenshaw, followed by Michael Machacek. You are allowed 2 minutes to speak. When the light up at the podium turns red, please stop speaking and allow the next individual their turn. You may address your comments to the chair. Thank you.
Good morning. Marvin Crenshaw, 5134 Malcolm X. Do we have a quorum? Okay. 5134 Malcolm X Boulevard. I'm here to talk about an issue not only just to the council, but to this city of Dallas, and particularly to the citizens who reside in Representative District 100. I happen to be listening to an interview with the civil rights icon and human rights icon. An artist, Harry Belafonte, several weeks ago. Well, I'm talking to the citizens anyway, so it'll make no difference. But where he was stating that if black people in America, we have lost all moral integrity regarding our struggle here in America. Because we're the only people who came here past the Statue of Liberty in chains, in a hole. And because of our struggles in this country, we have a responsibility regarding human rights. And we're also celebrating the 45th anniversary of the Voting Rights Act this year. Now, I support Eric Johnson. Thought about it. Went over my mind for days. I support Eric Johnson for state representative, District 100. I had called Terry Hodge once, and I told her, I said, Terry, I'm going to support you. Terry made her decision to resign. I respect that. And I think people should respect the fact that Eric Johnson follows the procedures, put his name on the line to run. And all of this nonsense about that something is wrong because this young man put his name on that line and he's running and he's the only one out there is totally insane and is politically immature for those who take that position, in my opinion. There's a sigh of relief in all communities because we're not going through another African-American elected official going in the courts about extortion or any of that other stuff. Terry took the proper position. That's the one that she had taken. She took that position. Wrote a letter to her constituents to apologize for her action. And in this community, those who know better should understand that and respect it and follow it and stop this insane nonsense.
Okay, that's not. You're done.
Don't tell me what that is. It's enough for
next
you.
Next speaker, please.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Your next speaker is Michael Matusek, followed by Eddie Potts. Please state your name and address for the record, sir.
Good morning. Well, I'm here today to speak about the southern part of South Dallas. We have a lot of property over on Terrell Ekin District, which is called Freeman Plantation. And I've been working with the juvenile system to try to help me coordinate and cultivate that area. But every time we come together and try to put something together, they always run me back to City Hall. And I wanted to get with Royce West at a round-the-board table meeting with y'all from City Hall to see what we can do to cultivate that area with the juvenile system. And I've been trying this project for 15 years with the City of Dallas. Nothing ever happened. You know, we've been turning our backs. And we're going to have to come together and come up with something to work with the southern part of Dallas for the youth, the at-risk kids. Matter of fact, I already got the grant, everything wrote up with the juvenile system. And just we're going to have to coordinate something in the southern part of Dallas for those youth through this system. We're not making nothing happen there. And everything comes to northern part of Dallas. When it comes to the southern part of Dallas, we just exempt. You know, and I would like to talk with Dwayne Carraway because he's in my district, and Ms. Davis, she's in the South Dallas district for the entertainment and the culture that we have. I'm also got El Centro College trying to help us put a movie production over in the southern part of Dallas. You know, but nothing ever happened when I come to these board meetings at City Hall. I've been calling Royce West, trying to get Royce West there. We can get together and put around the board meeting together with City Hall to go with the juvenile, to get the youth to go out and help do community service and cultivate that land, which is called Freeman, Texas, Freeman Town, which Miss Berry owns. I think y'all heard about that land before, you know, as far as y'all sitting in the City Hall. But I just want to get with y'all, let y'all know everybody running me back down here. And it's just like I'm going in a circle. How do we do a straight line and make it happen? That's all I want to know. Okay. I don't want to wait year to year no more.
Okay. Thank you. Ms. Davis?
Thank you, Mayor. Sir, thank you for coming down. And as you know, our doors are always open here at City Hall. And I know a lot of people continue to want to say, you know, what's going on in the southern sector. We did have, and I think we still do have, the mayor's Southern Task Force that Mr. Ekin was the chair of. But because we have some issues with just trying to bring some positive things into the southern sector, I mean, we have a whole lot of issues that we need to start focusing on. And so, like I said, our doors are open. Feel free to call me. Get with my administrator. I know Mr. Carraway doors is open, at least to kind of hear some of the concerns that you may have.
Yes, and I appreciate this.
Madam Secretary.
Thank you. Your next speaker is Eddie Propp. I'm sorry. Thank you. Michael Matusek, not present. Your last speaker this morning is Don Gilbert. Sir, please state your name and address for the record. Thank you.
My name is Donnie Gilbert. I live at 14-35 Seabrook Road. That's in District 8. I had a chance to talk to Mr. Allen a while back about something that is upsetting me. First of all, he asked me about the about what I thought about the booting. I thought it was a good idea, but I called that number this morning, and I got a recording. To me, if you're going to be booted, you need to be able to at least talk to an individual about your boot. That's number one. Number two, I called 911 twice, and I got told something different. I went to the Dallas Police Department, and I get something different. Who passes out tickets for people that park in handicapped spots without a handicap? We have signs to say $50 to $200 fine. I was told by 911 that Dallas Police Department doesn't do that. What you have in the signs, if we're not going to issue the tickets, that's money for the city of Dallas. And then my third and fourth topic are kind of on the same line. I'm tired of the city of Dallas sitting on the sidelines. I don't understand why for years we let DISD pay the city of Irvine $5,500 to play the playoff games over there. And last year they paid Jerry Jones $6,500 to go to Cowboy Stadium. Jerry don't need the money. We have a jewel over there called the Cotton Bowl. Why can't they play their playoff games in the Cotton Bowl? Speaking of the Cotton Bowl, we are getting ready for the 2018-2022 World Cup, okay? But our biggest concern is parking. I have a solution to the parking. I know we have a lot of vacant land over there and buildings that the city doesn't know what to do with. Build a covered parking garage, maybe 6 stories high. Okay? I don't want to go to the fair anymore because I don't know if my car is going to be there when I get back or not. Okay? And if we put 3,000 cars in there, just and at $20 a head, that's $60,000 just for that one event. And you multiply that over the whole time that we have the fair. $60,000, that's for 3,000 cars. We can have the parking garage as big as we want to, and that money can go back to improvement of the South Dallas area, or we can use it to get some big-name games coming to the Cotton Bowl, like the Army-Navy game, which Jerry Jones turned down because it was going to cost them money to fly the student body over here. We could set that money aside that we make on the parking from the Cotton Bowl to bring in big games, and also it will make that area a whole lot more enticing for people to come and get the off-street parking and maybe eliminate a lot of crime that's in that area. Thank you.
Thank you. I know Mr. Allen wants to make a comment.
Mr. Gilbert, I just want to say thank you for coming down. We met in a restaurant last week, and he stated that you watch this every Wednesday, and he's a concerned citizen. You can see his passion, and again, thank you very much for taking your time out to come down to City Hall and voice your opinion. Thank you very much.
That concludes your speakers for this morning.
Thank you. Our first item on the agenda is the minutes. Those are the minutes of February 10th. Those have been distributed. All those so moved and seconded. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Any opposed? So ordered. The following items have been asked to be considered individually. I'll run down those, and then I'll take a motion for both the regular agenda and the addendum. The ones that I have pulled individually, item number 3, Mr. Newman. Item number 4, Mr. Newman has requested that be considered individually. Item number 6, Mr. Atkins. Item number 10, Mr. Salazar. Item number 14, Ms. Margolin. Item number 44, Ms. Margolin. And then over on the addendum, item number 1, Mr. Atkins, and item number 2, Mr. Newman. In addition to that, number 45 on the regular agenda, that will be considered. Sure. I'll come back. 45 on the regular, Mr. Newman has a conflict on that, so that will be considered. So the ones individually then will be 3, 4, 6, 10, 14, 44, 45, and then over on the addendum, both of the ones that were above the line, that's number 1 and number 2. Okay? With that, if I could take a motion for consideration of... It's been moved and seconded that the items not identified on both the regular and the addendum be passed. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? So ordered. Madam Secretary, item number 3.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Item number 3 is authorize a 3-year service contract for maintenance of vacant and residential lots, medians, and rights of way. Councilmember Newman.
Mr. Newman, please.
Thank you, Mayor. Forrest, if you're available. Good morning, Forrest. How are you?
Good morning.
I like that striped shirt.
Thank you.
Oh, and that bow tie, too.
Thank you.
Forrest, my questions go to what the scope of this contract is. Is this for MoClean?
A portion of it is for MoClean, yes. Primarily it's for the street department for medians and rights of way.
When you say a portion, are there other contracts that fund MoClean, or is this the primary?
This is it. The primary work that's done by MoClean is by City of Dallas staff. From time to time, we have people who do other lots, such as land bank lots, trouble lots that we need people to get to in an emergency.
Okay, so this contract supplements the streets department or supplements Code's MoClean team?
This contract would supplement Code's MoClean, and it is the primary source for street departments, median, and rights of way.
Okay. And the comparison of this contract versus the previous contract, it looks like it's a decrease. Is it a decrease in the amount of MoCleaning? That's where my concern is.
Okay.
It looks like a difference, and some of the information you sent back to me on my inquiry to you, so there was a difference in the number of cleaning cycles, and so what got to me was, are we reducing our capacity for MoClean?
We are not reducing our capacity for MoClean. The decrease related to the mowing cycles being reduced for medians and rights of way.
Okay. So, Mary, I'm a little, I don't know if it's forced, Mary. So, one of the things that we asked for, the council asked for, and the manager promised was no reductions on code compliance. That, in my term, that includes MoClean, because that's a critical portion of MoClean.
Right.
Is that the case, considering this contract as well as the staffing, as it relates to MoClean?
To MoClean, yes. But we have reduced the cycles and the medians.
Okay, well... Okay. I'm with you on that. I can stomach that.
At this point, there have not been reductions in code.
Not reductions in code. And when you say that, that includes the MoClean component.
Yes, their code.
Your code.
Yes.
Okay. All right, then. Then I'm okay with it. I move approval.
Second. All right. Been moved and second. All in favor? Aye. Opposed? Hearing none. Madam Secretary, number four.
Thank you.
Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Number four, it's authorized a 3-year service contract for janitorial services at the Morton H. Meyerson Symphony Center, the Latino Cultural Center, the South Dallas Cultural Center, the Bathhouse Cultural Center, the Oak Cliff Cultural Center, and WRR Radio, TIBH Industries, Incorporated.
All right, Mr. Newman.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Forrest, I think you're the man on the spot again. I think this, if I understand this correctly, this organization, TIBH Industries, works with those with disabilities and challenges. I think that's fabulous, and I read the briefing where it shows that that's a provision in the state statute that allows the no-bid contract, that sort of thing. My question goes to, similar to the previous one, but as it relates to what the previous contract cycle is versus this. Could you explain that a little bit?
Yes. In fact, the reduction in service has to do with changes in the bid requirement. I'd like for Mr. Williams to come and brief you on that just briefly.
Good morning, Dave.
Good morning. The what we have initially when we first bid this out, we realized that TIBH we bid this out competitively. And at that time, we compared the pricing we received to what we received from TIBH, and it was TIBH offered us $33,000 less than the price of the competitive bid. So we feel pretty good that their pricing was good, and also the price they offered us, due to the changes that we made in the frequency of cleaning cycles, also contributed to the reduction in price. So they gave us a price less than the current pricing that we have under the expiring contract.
Okay, so the RFQ that the city sent out specified less hours for the facilities that are mentioned in the briefing here? Is that correct?
Well, that was previously this time around because we didn't send the RFQ out this time.
Okay, but you said you got bids. So how could you get bids?
We did that on previous contracts.
Okay.
We did that, and that's what we were comfortable. That was what gave us the basis to be comfortable with TIBH pricing this time around. We just renewed with TIBH, and in the process also, we reduced the frequency, the cleaning frequency. And so they looked at that and given us a lower price compared to the prior price that we received.
Okay. And so what's the hours reduction that we're talking about less cleaning of these facilities? Or what's the percentage? I'm wondering if it's of significance or if it's...
It's about 13%.
So about 13% less in basically in hours cleaning.
Yes.
So how do you do that? Just less frequency in the facilities, correct? Less times that you hit each of
right.
these facilities?
Right.
Okay. One other question for Gene, if you would, please. Gene? And this is something that I had asked of your eminent predecessor, Mr. Cook. In this action and in many others, it's starting to have, Mary, we're starting to have the language that says, this action does not encumber funds, the purpose of the service contract is to estimate firm pricing and so forth. How is it that we would send out, we would in essence sign a contract with a vendor, in this case for $1.4 million, and say that it's not something that encumbers the city? I see a disconnect there. Help me understand. I still don't understand how signing a contract does not encumber the city.
We have the option to discontinue the service.
So any contract that we sign as a city that we have an option out on does not encumber the city?
We use it on a monthly. We're going to use this contract on a monthly basis, so we may not.
Okay, so
use it every month.
It's similar to a price agreement. We may not use it all.
It's okay. Almost a T&M.
Okay. Time and material.
Right, time and material. So that's that. We engage for a given thing. That's under a structured time and materials piece. They do the work, we pay. But we're not obligated to call them back to do it the next time or anything else.
Okay. All right. Thank you. I move approval.
Okay. Move the second. Mr. Tiske, please.
Yeah. Just a comment, Mr. Mayor. Today, to follow up on Mr. Newman's line of questioning, which I think he was directed more at the money and the frequency, my concern would be when you negotiated this contract and when you talked to both the Meyerson Latino Cultural Center and WRR Radio's facilities, are we in any way putting these facilities in the position of not being, quote, unquote, as clean as they ought to be, or are we, I'm hoping that we're more efficient in how we do it and that we keep the facilities at the same level of cleanliness and standards that the public expects? That's an A or B question. You can pick whichever one you want. Well, I don't know. I'll leave that to you.
Well,
we got Mr. Turner behind you. His head is going like this. So
yeah,
whoever wants to answer that.
The short answer is you're correct, and it won't impact the service that we have at any of those facilities.
Okay, because I certainly don't want citizens starting to have to call the city council saying
you're
that the restrooms at the Meyer Center are not clean when they go over there.
That won't happen.
Thank you.
The quizzical look on Mr. Newman's face indicates.
I appreciate Mr. Natinsky's question, but how can that be? Mary, how can the manager suggest a reduction in cleaning services and also fulfill what Mr. Natinsky is saying is that it will not reduce anything of what the citizens expect?
Maybe they're cleaning it when the citizens aren't there.
Well, I don't know. Do you see my quandary?
Yes, I do. In fact,
because that begs the question, are we spending money on other things in our city that we don't necessarily need to spend if we can maintain the same level of service?
Again, you raise a good point. The staff has gone over both with the department and purchasing and in my office. How can this be? We've experienced a really good performance from TIBH. They're able to have chemicals, employees who are consistent. There's low turnover. And they're able to do a much better job, and we've done the due diligence to prove that up.
And their supplies are costing them less. So.
And by no means am I trying to squeeze the vendor. I think everyone deserves to have a reasonable profit and that sort of thing. I just think it's accolades that we're able to reduce the cost but maintain the service.
Well, there is going to be an effort to do that. It is not an easy thing to do.
That's correct.
But given the circumstances of our economy, everywhere we work, we're having to look and say, can this be done a different way? Can this be done more effectively, more efficiently? And yes, there's always some risk involved in pushing that, but we have to push.
And I applaud that, Mary. I applaud that for us in a day. It just begs the question elsewhere in our city with our $2.6 billion budget about how we're able to tighten our belt without cinching us.
Well, you're going to have a lot of belt tightening for the next few months.
That's why I made the comment just now, is that this shows the manager's able to tighten the belt without cinching. So.
Well, I didn't guarantee without cinching. I said,
that's what I said.
Okay.
Thank you, Mayor.
Okay.
And I would interject. I hope the A, B, C, and the D is that we continue to work with the vendors to change processes, to be more efficient, all those sorts of things, and not leave that out. In other words, this is a time of materials, but it certainly doesn't say that we can't find different ways to do it. Maybe it's staffing a different way. Maybe it's using different products. All sorts of things that we continue to ask those questions. I think that's kind of what we're obligated to do, especially in today's environment.
Thank you, Mayor.
It's been moved and seconded. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed to order? Madam Secretary, number six.
Item number six is authorized supplemental agreement number one to increase the service contract with CTJ Maintenance, Inc. for temporary industrial labor for sanitation services. Councilmember Atkins.
Yeah, thank you, Mayor. Mary Nix. The reason why I pull this call is, you know, everyone's trying to tighten the belt, and when you see something that said not to see $2 million, I think everybody needs to know the reason why this is modifying temporary service on this contract. You know, it started back in 2005 and 2007, and now it's back here. It was a $10 million contract, now it's going to go up to, it was an $8 million contract, now it's going to go to $10 million. Mary, could you just briefly tell the colleagues, the people here who are not here at the beginning of time, just why we increased this by $2 million?
Sure, I'd be happy to. There are two federal minimum wage increases in this time period that has occurred, and each one of those federal minimum wage increases increases the cost of the service to us. So the funds were being used up a little faster. But another positive reason is that recycling in Dallas has increased a lot also. And when recycling increases, we add recycling routes, and the recycling routes used two day laborers per truck. So we've used a little bit more in the most recent years thanks to better recycling.
So therefore, since we're going to one-day recyclers, so our day labor is going up. It's a contract who's doing it. We are asking them for more personnel to do the day labor?
That's right. We've increased the number of day laborers we're using under the recycling program.
Okay. I guess, Mary, to you, Mary, you know, the appropriation of fund of $2 million. When we did our last budget, did we have this $2 million in the budget? Did we knew going forward at this time we're going to have $2 million?
Yes, sir, because we were planning for this program, so we're budgeted for it.
So, okay, but did we know that, would it be set in stone with the increase in the more?
Well,
or we just planned?
No. Well, we planned ahead for this because we knew that the minimum wage had gone up. So we were planning for this. We look at our new programs. We look at what the wages are doing. So we knew ahead what we're doing.
Okay, that's all I need. Thank you very much.
Can I say this, please?
Thank you, Mayor. I have a question. Based on the increase of trying to hire more day labor for, I guess, recycling, where does this put, Mayor, our sanitation worker that's already there? How does
they're in good shape. This is extra work that may not be long term, so we'll be using the temporary day labor, but it doesn't hurt the people that are there.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Stelzer.
Thank you, Mayor. I guess my question goes to more of these are day laborers, so they're temporary workers. And my concern is only that over time you have workers who are considered temporary over a period of years, and they're consistent, they're good workers. While we applaud that we're adjusting these contracts, my concern is that we have temporary workers working for us for years through some other agency, but we're not really helping them build a future as far as retirement. I know they have workers' compensation coverage. So my only concern is that we should also look at this as that, is this something that we want to continue to the future to privatize, or is this something that we can look to transition in? I mean, we tried privatization and sanitation several years back, and I know we had to come back and bring them back in.
Well, this particular use of temporary labor is not privatization. And yes, we did have an experience with privatization that wasn't totally positive, but this is not privatization. In the budget process, you might ask us to look at that and see the differential. If you're going to use temporary labor for a long period of time, what kind of costs are involved in making somebody permanent, and that's, that just has to be a budget decision for you.
Right, you know there's a cost involved, but also there's a quality of life issue involved in there that if you have, say, a crew that's worked together for 10 years, and at the end of 10 years, you know, the next day they can just say, well, you don't got a job anymore. In most other industries, you work, your temporary workers will last 6 months to 9 months, and then you can transition them to a full-time workforce, and then you can give them the benefits, and that's how you build, you know, citizens in our community, because I think if you look at all these day laborers, they live in the city of Dallas. And if we're not helping them for the future, I think it's a disservice to the citizens of Dallas that we're not rewarding people who want to live in the city, work in the city, and contribute back into the city. But that's one of my concerns. But I want to applaud the manager and also the staff, Ms. Nix, for moving forward and working with the workers on the issues of safety. I think that's very important. I think uniformity and even providing these day laborers with the ability to perform their jobs in a safe manner is very important, and we need to make sure that communication continues. They work for somebody else, but we're the ones who oversee them, so we need to make sure that they get the proper training and equipment to do their jobs. And I just also want to thank them for during the time that the crisis with the snow and the tree falling, the great work that we appreciate that they're doing to make sure that our trash gets picked up and the limbs are being picked up in a reasonable amount of time. And I know it's a lot of extra work, so we appreciate everything that they're doing.
Thank you.
Ms. Huntley?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. In follow-up to what Mr. Salazar was saying, I think it's important that we remember that it's not just day laborers who don't get long-term benefits from the city. Our sanitation workers are not city employees, the guys who are on the back of our trash trucks. Is that right, Ms. Nix?
The day laborers who are on the back of the trucks are temporary employees. But other laborers, we have laborers within the department who are full-time city employees. Almost none of them are on the backs of the trucks.
But we don't have, and I know this from talking with our sanitation workers, and I know this from trying to get them a living wage 2 years ago, they are not city employees. They're hired through a contract.
That's right. That's the contract we're talking about today.
That's the contract we have. And the challenge I think we have is doing exactly what Mr. Salazar was talking about, and it's addressing quality of life issues for these folks who are, what, making a minimum wage?
That's right.
They're making minimum wage. And I want each and every one of us around this horseshoe to think about supporting your family on a minimum wage. It is not possible. And these are men who take care of our city when we have snowstorms, when we have incredibly difficult weather, that but for them, we wouldn't be able to take care of all of our tree limbs that are down. We wouldn't be able to have a sanitary, clean city. And I really do think it's deplorable that we have not moved forward with a living wage for these guys. So I have a real problem with that. I think we should have taken advantage of the fact that we reduced our sanitation fee and used those funds to address a living wage for these guys, because they don't have, do they have retirement through the city?
No, they do not.
Do they have health insurance through the city?
They do not.
And they make minimum wage. And yet, colleagues, this is one of the most important functions that our city does, is taking care of sanitation. So I have grave concerns about it. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you, Ms. Allen.
Just real quick, without question, your department does a great job, and obviously the challenges that you have and with the budget that you have. And that's the word, is challenge, because as we do this, there's always hard decisions that have to be made, hard financial decisions, because you give to one group and then take away from another group. So it's a balancing act. We've got so much need that's out there that we've got to be good financial stewards of the citizens' money and make sure that we are good financial stewards, because there's so much need all across the city. So I just appreciate the hard work that you've done on some hard decisions that have to be made. So I just wanted to say that.
Ms. Davis, please.
Thank you, Mayor. Mary, I listened to some of my colleagues, and I know we're going to have a tough budget this year. And we're talking about this issue with sanitation workers and temporary workers, and some of them are still just at bare bones, just minimum wage. How do we address this issue if we don't start talking about raising taxes in the city? You know, what are some of the things we
look at? In this particular situation, you would be raising the garbage fee, not the taxes.
Okay, so right now, how much is our garbage fee right now?
It's $20.34 a month.
So right now, I pay $20, and we're perhaps looking at another increase of how much? You don't know yet?
No, don't know yet.
Okay. I'm hoping that my garbage don't go up to $40 or $50, and I'm paying $50 a month in just garbage. And if that is the case, I'm going to expect a better service, mm-hmm. way, way much better service.
Well, I don't think we intend to do a $50 garbage.
Oh, no, I'm just saying. I'm not saying that. That's not. Let me make it very clear. I said I hope. I didn't say that is
no,
going to be.
I assure case. You, we're not doing that.
Okay, yeah, I'm not putting that out there that it's going to be fair, because I know that you have not done the budget yet, or you're working on it.
Right.
Thank you so much.
Ms. Fitler, please.
Thank you, Mayor, and thank you, Ms. Hunt, for your comments, and Mr. Allen, for your complimentary comments to Ms. Nix. They're all true. You do a fantastic job. We happen to have a situation in front of us, as Ms. Hunt spoke of, And that is the fact that the people that are keeping our city clean, and we just finished bragging, and we had a great time with the All-Star and how clean the city was unexpectedly with the snowstorm, and then when you have these guys hanging out on the back of the trucks that are uninsured, that are not employed by the city, it is something that I'd like to open discussion on to see how we can better help and bring those core workers into the proper fold. It is very difficult as a council member, and I'll go on a limb and say that here, for us to sit here every day around, well, for me to sit here every day around this horseshoe with the minimum salary that we have and the compensation serving here, the citizens of Dallas. I certainly respect and appreciate that and the opportunity that I've been given, but the meager salary that we as council members receive is very, very difficult. Now, with that being said, I could just imagine the difficulties that the folks on the back of the garbage trucks are having, because certainly they make even less than we do, and where we have an opportunity to share into health care costs, they don't. So I'm not being critical more than I am wanting to open up the discussion as to how we can cover that gap at some future point as it relates to the people that are picking up our trash, especially as we start March the 6th on once a week trash collection. I'm very supportive of that in our recycling program. Seeing that we are going to cut in some areas, but I'd like to figure out ways to put dollars back in somewhere so that we can better cover the folks that are covering our backsides on a daily basis here in the city. So thank you, but I do want to open it up for discussion.
Mr. Kissy, please.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. You know, I think that while we all know we're going to be embarking on some, you know, very tough budget discussions and decisions this upcoming 6 to 7 months, we had some tough ones previously. I think these, you know, with the cuts that we've been doing and you tighten your belt and you can become more efficient, it becomes tougher and tougher to get that last dollar out of the system. I appreciate the work that Ms. Nix and her crew does, you know, with keeping the sanitation rates as low as possible. I think, I don't really want to rehash the entire discussion we had previously on this, but I think we're losing sight of the issue that these are temporary workers that have chosen to be temporary workers. And so, Ms. Nix, am I correct in remembering that this particular group of workers are temporary workers more out of choice than out of necessity, that many of them, if not all of them, have been given the opportunity to become full-time city employees and for some reason have chosen their line of work?
Well, each of the folks who are in the temporary workforce are eligible for work with the City of Dallas. And as jobs are opening, some of them transition and become permanent employees. Mm-hmm. Many do not, and it may be their own choice, and it may be their own circumstances.
Right.
Hard to say.
And so as we're going through this, I think we have to, you know, focus on, number one, are we getting an adequate supply of people to work in that particular work group through this contract? Do you have workers when you...
Yes, we have adequate workers and good workers.
Okay. And I'm not in any way saying that we, you know, shouldn't try to get people an opportunity to move up the social chain or economic chain, but at the same time, we've got a city to run, and we need to do it in the most responsible, best balanced manner that we can. And if this is something that works for us, then I think that we need to keep that program moving in that direction. If at some point, Ms. Nix, you come up with a better way to deal with it, I'm sure that we'll have a briefing at the council and you'll give us some other ideas to toss around. The other is that sanitation is a standalone, I guess it's a quasi-enterprise fund.
We are a full-cost recovery department.
Yeah, that's what you know. Okay. And so with that, that in no way connects itself over to the general fund. So
right.
If we raise garbage fees, you know, all we're doing is trying to offset costs. So obviously the cost of employees is a big piece of that puzzle. But that is a balance, and whether you raise taxes or whether you raise garbage fees, anytime the citizen has to write another check or a larger check to the city, they're usually not very happy. So I think that we need to focus on doing the most cost-efficient job that we possibly can. Appreciate the work that you all have done, and keep it up. Thank you.
Mr. Newman, please.
Thank you, Mayor. First, I'll take the opportunity, Mary, to say thank you to sanitation, to streets, and the Park and Rec Department for doing a great job in cleaning up the tree and limbs that have been throughout the neighborhoods. I've had very good feedback, positive feedback from my neighborhood, so I won't stray too off the agenda item, but I want to take the opportunity to say sanitation, streets, and Park and Rec collectively have done a great job in doing that, so thank you. I can't echo enough Mr. Allen's comments about the importance of the city being flexible, a term that Mary told me 2 years ago to stop using, and that was nimble. But it is very important that we as a city are nimble and we make sure that just like the private sector, we're flexible in our hiring, we're flexible in our contracts. The item before that this council just reviewed and approved spoke about how we were able to reduce the contract and maintain the service. That all goes to the bottom line to the citizens and all goes to less expenses, less tax rates for our city. We as a city have to always be thinking about how we can be more efficient and cost effective. I view this, the temporary labor that is working for the city and the sanitation department, that's a positive thing as long as the work conditions are positive and safe, and I think we should continue that as long as we're good employers. And let's always remember, any dollar, anything we increase our expenses goes back to not only the property owners, council members, but the many renters that pay water bills as well. Thank you very much. Not water bills, sanitation, I'm sorry. Thank you, Mayor.
Thank you. And I would reinforce 2 points that have been made at the risk of repeating them. I think they're important. One is, and I think it's been reinforced in previous conversations, Mr. Kinski kind of affirmed it in his questioning, and that is that a lot of these temporary workers, one, choose not to do this. In other words, there are ongoing openings in the permanent basis of sanitation where they could move up if they choose to do that over a period of time. And second is some of these individuals may very well not meet the qualifications that we require for a full-time employee. So one, they have options. Two, they may not have the opportunities to do that because they simply don't meet the qualifications that we set. The second thing that's important, and Mr. Newman went at it too, is we can talk about moving dollars around, but we need to understand it's a zero-sum game. We can increase any individual line item, but that's going to have to come out of another line item at some point. And that's going to impact the program, pay that we give other people, those sorts of things. And I think it's incumbent upon anybody that as you propose those sorts of things, the flip side becomes then, here's the program I'd eliminate, here's where I take it out of, here's the additional dollars that I would take from somebody else, because I think we need to be consistent as we do that. And then the other piece of it, of course, is we've got a responsibility, too, to our taxpayers,
roughly 1.3 million citizens, as Mr. Newman pointed out, renter or homeowner doesn't make any difference. They're all paying dollars to us, as well as the businesses do. And to the extent we forget our fiscal responsibility to those individuals, then all of a sudden we're not doing our job and we're not serving the taxpayers and the residents of this city. So I just want to reinforce that there's a lot of different moving parts to this. One, the analysis would show that there are great opportunities for these individuals to move up if they so choose to do it, if they meet the qualifications. And two is, let's not forget the obligation we've got to our taxpayers. I need a motion on this. We don't have a motion. Mr. Allen's moved and Mr. Tinsley seconded. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Any opposed, so ordered. Madam Secretary, could we go to item number 10? Mr. Salazar, I think item number 10 has been addressed. So if you could make, we'll read it in the record. If you could make a motion, we'll go on.
Yes, ma'am. I had some questions regarding some...
We'll get the record, and then we'll go.
Item number 10 is authorize an amendment to the contract for co-bond counsel services with McCall Parkhurst and Horton LLP and Escamilla and Ponick, Inc., and Vinson and Elkins LLP and West and Associates LLP to extend the term of the contract for a two-year period from February 28, 2010 through February 28,
2012. Mr. Salazar, please.
Thank you, Mayor. I have some questions concerning some of the variations from different team members and amounts of the on the contract with respect to hourly and the different the difference between some of them. My questions were answered. My understanding is some team members have certain specific types of consultants or attorneys that are used and the other ones don't, and that's what the variation between a 0.30 and a 0.15. I want to thank them, Mr. Perkins and Ms. Satterwith for working on this and to give me just the information on the differences. And that being said, Mayor, I'll move approval.
Second. It's been moved and seconded. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, so ordered. Madam Secretary, 14, please.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Item number 14 is authorize, number one, recognition of the 2010 Police and Fire Meet and Confer Team, and number two, establishment of a Management Meet and Confer Team.
Yes.
Councilmember Margolin.
Ms. Margolin, do you want to make comment?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. It's my understanding that Meet and Confer is a formalized process whereby a team representing police and fire meets with a team representing the City of Dallas to address issues of concern to police and fire. Could be wages, benefits, working conditions, and that it's sometimes referred to as collective bargaining light. House Bill 2307 that the legislature gave us, the municipalities, includes three options for us that we have. The first is that the City Council can approve the team that's been presented by Police and Fire. The second is that we can ask Police and Fire to have a formal certification election to confirm that the slate that they've put forward does represent them. And the third is that the voters can decide whether the city should engage in Meet and Confer. So in discussing it with Ms. Soom, she has convinced me that the petition, the number of signatures on the petition presented by Police and Fire does indicate that this slate or this team represents Police and Fire. So that leaves the City Council with two choices. We can accept the team, and the second choice is we can bring it to the citizens for an election. Now, Texas has always been known for supporting business and for minimizing regulations. In the past year, there was a big article that was well reported in The Economist magazine comparing Texas to California and concluding that much of the resilience of the Texas economy is due to our understanding of what it takes to help business thrive. The Greater Dallas Chamber published a research-based report about a year ago that put Dallas in the top 10 cities nationwide as good cities to do business. We've weathered the current economic crisis better than much of the rest of the country for these reasons. If we approve this item, we're signaling a new and different message and a new direction. I understand the importance of working with police and fire. I think it is absolutely critical that we understand their concerns and attempt to address them. But this is a bigger issue. It is a change in which the way the city does business. It's a big step for the city to take. And unfortunately, the legislature has only given us two options. It says that we can approve it, or we can turn it to the citizens of Dallas to approve it or not approve it. And given that those are our only two options, and that we don't have the option to not support it as a city council, then I think it's a decision that the voters need to make. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
I'll comment in a moment. Mr. Atkins, please.
Mayor, I just want to make a motion to move to go forward, please.
Second. Been moved to second, Ms. Hutton.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor, and I appreciate Ms. Margolin's point. I would say this, though. I don't think there is anyone in our city besides our firefighters and police who do more to protect us, keep our city safe, and who put their lives on the line for us on a daily basis. And for them to have the small opportunity to be able to engage with our city management on issues such as salary and benefits and other working conditions, to me that is just a very small concession for all that they give. So I'm wholeheartedly supporting this. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
And I want to make a couple of comments on this because, again, I think facts determine how we should look at this. I think the way that it was framed a moment ago is absolutely inaccurate. Meet and confer is not an obligation under either body, either the employer or the employee. It's simply a process not unlike mediation of sitting down and walking through issues. And not only can the employee group put issues on, but the employer group can put on issues in terms of quality of life, productivity, dealing with that in a whole host of different ways. It is a total voluntary effort. That conversation can go on at any time. Either of the groups, be the employer or the employee, can pull out and walk away. That is a very different process than collective bargaining. In fact, collective bargaining is under Section 174 of the state law. And so it's a very different situation. This is one that simply allows the two groups to come together, talk, and walk on issues. I would also point out the city's been doing it for 3 or 4 years, too. So this isn't anything new. We've been going through it, and to try to categorize this as collective bargaining, I think, is absolutely inaccurate. It's wrong. And also to put it in the context of some of the issues that I think are very important on why we've been successful attracting businesses, right to work, those sorts of things, it's just not accurate. Again, I think it's important to look at this for what it is and what the accuracies are, and it is simply a volunteer effort coming together, sit down, go through issues. It is, and again, I want to stress there is nothing that's obligatory about it at all. Either party during any part of the process can get up, walk away, and say, this isn't working, and we'll find something else. So with that, Mr. Newman.
Thank you, Mayor. Couple questions. Mary, if the council approves this today, back up, sorry. First of all, as a councilman, I've been honored for the last year and a half, almost 2 years, to represent the City Council and the Dallas Police Fire Pension System Board of Trustees. It's been one of the best things that I've been honored to serve on, because side by side with firemen and firefighters and police officers, got to keep it gender neutral, we have really learned, and Mr. Allen and Ms. Margolin and now Mr. Gadane are all on that board with us, Ms. Medrano and Mr. Caraway also serve, you learn about how passionate these firefighters and these police officers are about their job, their career, and about the city. So I want to say that very clearly first. And I'm honored to serve, and it's a great group of individuals concerned about the long term for their profession and for the city. Mary, question. Who do you propose, if the council approves this today, to represent the city on this in this equation?
It would be Ryan Evans, Dave Etheridge, Assistant Director of HR, Molly McCall, and there'll be a resource person from police and fire both.
Okay. And to further clarify and cement or not the mayor's comments as it relates to binding or not binding the council and the city, tell us from your perspective as our city manager, what would that group be able to do as it relates to bind or not bind the city?
Well, the group can't bind the city at all. We'd have to bring an agreement back to you to approve.
Okay, so it's totally, it's a discussion, it's an open forum, but it still comes back to the council for any decision or any binding of the city or the citizens.
Yes.
Okay. How do you anticipate that process compared to the existing process in place?
Well, I think it'll be very similar. For the last 3 to 4 years, we've sat down starting about this time of year with police and fire and talked about what the budget situation is, what their concerns were about various, you know, salary or benefits or operational SOP, whatever, and had a discussion about it. And then we've come to an agreement that I would include in the budget.
Okay. Or where you would propose to the council to
include in my budget, it is a proposal to the council, yes.
Okay. But again, it comes back to the council for
absolutely
discussion and approval.
That's right.
Okay. Mayor and council members, I will support this today for two reasons. Number one, because I've had a year and a half to 2 years experience of working with firefighters and police officers through the police fire pension system, and I have an additional perspective about their sense of the long term and for the city and their profession. And number two, the fact that it still reserves the right for this council on behalf of the citizens to be able to control and or bind and or agree to what's best in the long term for the city. And part of what I'm telegraphing is to the leaders of the fire department, rank and file, and the police department today, is that I'm expecting you to continue your passion for your profession and for the long term best interest of the city. Because that's what we're all here for, is to balance this. No one wants, whether it be on this council or our professional staff or our firefighters or our police officers, to kill the golden goose. As Mr. Allen said on a previous agenda item, we have weathered Ms. Margolin has said, as a city, very well despite this economic downturn, and we do not want to endanger the city's ability to hire, retain, maintain a qualified workforce, and do it cost-effectively for our city. So I'll be supporting this with those caveats. Thank you, Mayor.
Thank you. Mr. Kipke, please.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. You know, over the last couple of years, we've taken some huge steps in our public safety department, both police and fire, to build our forces, build up the morale and respect that the departments have with the citizens. And we've seen a marked increase in the quality of quote-unquote customer service that the citizens see both from the police department and the fire department. And I think it's well-earned. We've had a situation over the years where discussions have been taking place between the various groups and the city manager and her staff, and it's really not unlike good lines of communication that need to be taking place in the private sector. We are not the private sector, but we are the stewards of the taxpayers' money. And if you can't have good open communication, you're usually going to come to a loggerhead. It's not really good to be festering about with a problem in a back room somewhere, wondering what the other side is thinking about it. It's better to get to the table and talk about it. Under this program, the team, both from the city's team and from the employees' team, are not in a position to bind the city in any way without the actions coming to the council. So, in a way, the issue of should we take this to the voters, I believe that into the current environment in the city of Dallas right now, it would be hard-pressed for the voters of the city of Dallas to not vote to support what the police and fire department employees are asking them to do. And so I'm not sure, while I'm not a predictor of the outcome of elections, I'm not sure that it would be in the city's best interest to spend $1 million to have an election to go to the voters who right now have a lot of respect for these public safety employees and ask them to vote to do something that the city is on the way to taking that step without having to spend that amount of money. I think that the council still is in a position, if there are significant policy or, as Ms. Soon put it, budgetary issues, those are the issues that will come before the council on an annual basis to be appropriated. I just don't see the downside that some may believe is lingering out there about taking this step and sort of codifying what has been taking place previously.
on a day-to-day basis in the city. And I want to thank, I know we've got a group here both from the police and fire departments, all of their various groups and entities and representatives. Y'all wave to us. We know you're out there. Appreciate y'all coming on down here, and I'll be supporting this. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Allen,
I too will be supporting this. I believe that the voters vote every 2 years to elect us to make these decisions, and I'll just summarize what some of my colleagues have already said. Firm believer in open communication, two-way street, what's in the best interest of the city, two-way street, and then respect, two-way street. So y'all already proven what you can do, and so we'll just go down this road and see where it goes. Good communication, good communication.
Again, I would reiterate my colleagues. I know we've got a number of representatives out there, and just thank you for what you do on a day-to-day basis. As I've said often, for most instances in this city, we're represented not by the city council, but we're represented by the police officers and firemen each day, firefighters each day, because they're the ones that have contact with the citizens of this city, and they're the ones that are molding the impression that our citizens have of our city. So we appreciate everything that you're doing. Ms. Margolin?
I just want to correct Councilmember Natinsky. If this were on a ballot at another election, it would not cost nearly $1 million. It would be insignificant. I also want to conclude by saying and making it clear that I completely honor and respect our uniformed officers, our firefighters. I'm honored to work with them. I am just wary of moving this step forward. I continue to think that the process that we've had, keeping lines of communication open, is absolutely imperative. Working as a team is imperative. This just feels like too big a step, and it's a step that I'm wary of taking. Thank you.
It's been moved and seconded. All those in favor, signify. Sure.
Thank you. All have voted on the motion. Voting in favor, Mayor Leppert, Mayor Pro Tem Carraway, Medrano, Kadane, Newman, Natinsky, Salazar, Atkins, Heal, Davis, Hunt, and Allen. Voting against, Margolin, absent, Coop, and Hasso.
Madam Secretary, item 44, please.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Item number 44 is authorized payment to the North Central Texas Council of Governments for the city's participation in the fiscal year 09-10 Regional Public Works Program. Councilmember Margolin.
Ms. Margolin.
Thank you. Let me get this item up just a second. Is Jill Jordan here? Jill? This is a program that we're being asked to contribute about $41,000 to, and I had submitted a question to staff about it, and I received an answer, and I still have some questions. Can you explain to me what this pool of money does that we're contributing to and why it is of benefit to the City of Dallas?
Certainly. The City of Dallas has been participating with the COG on this kind of work since 1977. It's an opportunity whereby public works directors from cities all across the region get together and work on issues of common interest. For example, we have a set of construction specifications that are widely used on all of the public project, capital project, and all the cities and the counties use the same specifications. What that does for us, it gives us an economic advantage because cities aren't then competing against each other by having different kinds of criteria so that the contractors know what to expect from each city. We're all doing the same thing, which helps lower our costs. And it improves the quality of the infrastructure going in because the whole region is doing the same kind of thing.
That was one of the initial projects that this group of public works directors working through the COG tackled, and they continue to work on that to this day because we continue to refine those specifications as new products come in and new techniques come in. Starting around 2001, or in that time period, the concept of ICEWM came up, the Integrated Stormwater Management Drainage Technique, and COG became the leader in which all of the public works departments, again, worked on this new drainage design manual and technique of doing it. That work is continuing, and the council recently adopted ICEWM as an optional technique for handling drainage in the city of Dallas. So they're continuing to work on ICEWM.
So the bottom line of this is you're saying that this creates consistent standards for the region.
Right.
And that it's important that we have consistent standards.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you. Then I move approval.
Then move to the second.
Second. All right. Ms. Atkins?
Yeah, Jim, my question is on the line with to integrate the stormwater ICEWM.
Yes.
Could you just tell me what information, the development, what exactly they will be doing on the ICEWM and on ICEWM project for COG?
Right. So COG developed the original ICEWM manual, and that was published probably about 3 years ago now.
Right.
What we are working on this year that we're in right now is we're continuing to refine it. The work that we did on ICEWM, in which we looked at incentives to help developers.
Okay. My question is, number one, we had a task force for the city of Dallas to work on ICEWM.
Right.
And they brought it to brief us about the ICEWM.
Right.
And we had different category of how we're going to do it.
Mm-hmm.
So is they taking that information and giving to COD and they...
And they're now making that region-wide, and they're continuing to do training for people so that they know how to use this, and they are continuing to update the manual for new... design practices and new products going in that are related to drainage.
Are they looking at the cost factor in any kind of way, how to address the price? Because when we got briefed, there was a very, very high price tag on ICEWM to the developers. Are this going to be part of the cost mechanism? How do you address, you know,
right,
so many acres or whatever, you know?
Yes, that they're looking at that kind of incentives that would help lower the cost to developers using ICEWM.
Okay, when you said developers, do we have a, to integrate, do we have a scope of work that's saying that this is part of their assignment to make sure, you know, lowering the cost for developers? That we have a scope of work to get an RFP? You know, I'm just really concerned about ICEWM because I know we're doing a task. So I'm trying to make sure, are they taking the task on to make sure our life is more easy for the developers?
Well, two things are happening. First is, you know, we're going to have our own task force of developers looking at the incentives. But likewise, the Council of Governments has hired a consulting firm to look at it as well and integrate that into the manual.
Okay. Thank you, Mark.
Thank you, Ms. Newman.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I'm absolutely for this. I think this is important. My only word of caution to you, Jill, representing the manager's office, and to Mary, is we keep using funds that go back to the Stormwater Drainage Fund. And the danger of our continued reliance on the Stormwater Drainage Fund is going to keep putting pressure on that fee that each year, and to now, I mean, this is something that was a bone of contention of yours last year, and I agree. So I just caution about our continued reliance on expenses that are funded by the Stormwater Drainage Fund. Thank you.
Thank you. We've got a motion and a second. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Any opposed, so ordered. Madam Secretary, we'll go to 45. Mr. Newman, you have a conflict of interest on that. The record shows that Mr. Newman has excused himself from the chamber. Item 45.
Item number 45 is authorize a contract for the installation of water and wastewater mains at 24 locations. Barson Utilities, Inc., lowest responsible bidder of 9.
So moved.
It's been moved and seconded. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Any opposed? So ordered. Madam Secretary, let's go over to the addendum item number 1.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Addendum item number 1 is authorized, number 1, an increase in the master agreement for roll carts with Toter, Inc. in the amount of $2,744,875, and number 2, a change in the assignment by Toter, Inc. of financing for future purchases under contract from Chase Leasing to Capital One Public Funding, LLC. Councilmember Atkins.
Thank you, Mayor. Ms. Nix, please. I guess it could be Gene. On these particular, the change for the roll cart, we're increasing that from $10 million to $13 million. And the reason why is we're going to increase the blue carts in the gray carts?
It's largely the blue carts that are needed under this contract. You may remember that when this contract started a few years ago, we didn't have the one-day program as accelerated as it is now. But this year, people are needing way more blue carts than we anticipated when the contract was let.
So what we did was when we started the one-day, when we decided to go to one-day service citywide, we already appropriate X amount of dollars for the blue cart when we go citywide. Is that correct?
Yes, it's appropriated in the budget. The contract, though, was let 2 years before, and it didn't anticipate that acceleration of need in this year.
And we're also going to increase the gray carts, right?
We are going to continue to buy gray carts. We're not increasing the demand on gray carts, Mr. Atkins, but every year there's 20,000 or so, 20,000 to 30,000 gray carts that need to be replaced because of age, wear and tear.
Okay, but we're saying we're going to do 40,000.
Yeah, that's over that time period. I think this contract will extend for another period of time.
So this is a two-year contract?
Yeah. It's a five-year contract, and we are in year 3.
Okay, on the blue cart, we did tell the citizen that if they want to have an extra blue cart, they can call the city and require an extra blue cart. Is that correct?
That is correct, yes.
So did we put in the factor that if they decide to do an extra blue cart, are we going to have enough blue carts?
You bet. We counted that in. You bet.
Okay. With that, Mayor, I'll make a motion to go forward. Thank you.
It's been moved and seconded. And I would just interject. The cost of this is included in the sanitation fee.
That's correct. It is.
So it's all part of that fee. Ms. Margolin?
Yeah, I just have a question about, it says that the financing is current funds, but then it talks about leasing through Capital One. So are we leasing? I mean, is this financed or is this paid out of current funds? It is financed, and the answer is both, but it's financed, and it's these carts, because we're purchasing, you know, $10 million, $11 million worth of carts, rather than have that hit the sanitation fee in one fell swoop, we're buying them on a five-year note. And the agreement with the financing company is set up as a lease purchase. And so the carts have about a five-year life? Actually, they have more of a 10-year life. They're set up for a 10-year life. Many of them are lasting beyond that. Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Newman.
Thank you, Mayor. My question goes to the change of financing. This agenda item is apparently the vendor is saying they're changing from Chase to Capital One. Is that
right,
Mary?
Yeah.
Is there any additional cost to the city as it relates to the changing of that financing vehicle?
No, there's not. The financial agreements are to remain the same as they were with the original agreement.
So it's totally transparent. We still totally transparent financially.
Yes.
Okay, good. Thank you. Thank you, Mayor.
Ms. Hill, please.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Ms. Nix, everyone has a calling in life, and yours is to be the best trash lady in the world. I'm glad we have you. Thank you.
I appreciate that.
It's been moved and seconded. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Any opposed? So ordered. Madam Secretary, addendum item number 2.
Addendum item number 2 is an ordinance amending Chapter 12A of the Dallas City Code to number 1, exempt members of municipal management district boards from certain provisions of the city's code of ethics to facilitate the operation of the MMDs under state law, and number 2, require members of MMD boards to comply with the city's financial disclosure requirements. Councilmember Newman.
Mr. Newman, please.
Thank you, Mayor. I'm supportive of what we're moving forward here because I think, Mayor, council members, we're balancing transparency and clarity and keeping, and this went back and forth with a couple council committee as it relates to the code of ethics, but also making sure that we could be inclusive of members. The point that I rise to comment today is just to speak to the North Oak Cliff MMD, and this is to the council and the manager, is that I'm still on a steep learning curve on MMDs in that process, and although I voted for the creation of the MMDs last fall, I said it with reservations. I still have reservations because of the vast taxing powers that these MMD entities that we as a council create have. And so as we go down this path, I'm just very publicly stating that I have still significant concerns and reservations. I have not yet recommended the council for appointment to the North Oak Cliff MMD, but I'm going through that conversation now. And I just want to rise to the comment that I still have significant reservations about this MMD process. But I will support this to come forward. I just have reservations about MMDs in general. Thank you. Thank you, Mayor.
Mr. Zinski, please.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. This particular item was at the Economic Development Committee on two different occasions, and I know there was somewhat a level of dismay amongst the committee members when it first came up. But after working with staff and taking the input from the committee, what we ended up and what we have here today is a change in policy that removes the restrictions that created the situation where citizens could not serve on the MMD boards because they obviously have an inherent conflict because they do own the property and have a financial position in the MMD area. This item that's before us today removes only those items that are necessary to allow those individuals to serve on the MMD, keeps in place all of the other ethics and financial reporting policies that all of the other board and commission, including the council members, have to do in the city of Dallas. So I think it's a good result, and with that, I'll be moving approval, Mr. Mayor.
Second. Thank you very much. It's been moved and seconded. Mr. Salazar, please.
Thank you, Mayor. I want to thank the Chairman Tinsky for moving this forward and addressing in the council. I think, you know, for the city of Dallas, these are our first MMDs. For cities such as Houston, they have well over 30 MMDs. And one of the realities is that an MMD is a great tool that can be used by the private sector to move forward areas that need more development, need infrastructure, need police protection. And one great example, before we voted on these MMDs, I took a tour of Houston with Councilman Rodriguez, and I asked, well, what does the MMD do? And we had lunch at a small restaurant downtown and said, see that rail line? The voters of Houston never approved it. The MMD came in and said, we'll help structure a deal to finance it and to make it happen. So through the MMD, they were able to create a downtown rail line where otherwise they would not have been able to do. That just shows a small potential what an MMD can do. An MMD in a small area, a rural area, can also help to bring wastewater lines where they don't have the resources to do otherwise. And an MMD is not solely dependent on the tax dollars from real estate. It can also be the sales tax. And that community used sales tax because they had the availability of a penny to do it. So an MMD can be used in a lot of different ways that we have not even begun to scratch the surface on how to utilize within the city. My hope is that through these first three MMDs that start out, that we can address issues throughout the entire city, working with property owners to enhance their ability to tax themselves and use the money to make their areas better. I envision one for Fair Park in the future. I can envision one in Arcadia Park. And as I can also envision one, and you can call it the Wildcat MMD if you want, out in East Dallas. So as these go forward, I think that this is going to be a tool which the council does have the purview to review their budgets every year and to assess their finances because of the way the legislation is written. We do have oversight on their budget, and so. But I think it's a great tool that's been used in other cities, and they have strived using them. And I ask everyone to vote in favor. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Atkins, please.
Thank you, Mayor. Carl Zava, Council, please. I guess the Christian Board of Directors, the Board of Directors, Carl, first got to be appointed by the City Council. Is that correct? On the MMD. The Board of Directors. It said that last, in order to begin negotiation agreements for each MMD, the Board of Directors must be appointed by the City Council.
That's correct.
Okay. Have we got to that point yet?
We're in the process. We needed to consider this
right after this
amendment vote. First before appointing a board because of the ethics consideration.
Okay. On the Board of Directors, there will be three people, right? Three from the City of Dallas?
Three members from the City of Dallas is correct.
And for colleagues, I guess, Ron, you did a great job in the economic development to explain the MMD. I thank colleagues that I wish, well, I want you, for Carl, to give everyone a timeline or chart, the schedule of the MMD, how to come back for council, the bylaws that we did in the first briefing. Could you just briefly tell us the timeline, how the MMD works and when it actually goes into effect?
Well, the council initially passed a resolution endorsing the MMDs, and then the state legislature actually created them in this last legislative session. Now we are, because the council needs to appoint the board members, while we're considering an amendment to the ethics code to make that consistent with how we'd like our ethics policy enforced. The next step is to appoint the board members, and then after that we have to negotiate a development and operating agreement with the MMD boards, which will in effect set about the guidelines under
which
we'll
operate. But would that development and operating agreement come back to council?
Yes.
Okay.
It'll be just like a development agreement.
I want to put all the periods in there so we make sure we don't miss the timeline. Go ahead.
That's right. Well, that in effect, that's the most pertinent thing because until that operating agreement is in place, nothing else can happen.
Okay.
And so we'll be coming back to the Economic Development Committee and to the council to approve that operating agreement.
Thank you.
Ms. Montgomery, please.
I just want to comment that my biggest concern about this was that it be clear that the members of the board are subject to the lobbying and registration ordinance, as well as anything else in our ethics ordinance that does not conflict with their ability to function as board members. And so since that has been accomplished, I think a great job has been done, and I'm happy to support it.
Thank you. It's been moved and seconded. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, so ordered. Madam Secretary, let's go back to 47 then on the regular agenda, if we could, please.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Item number 47 is consideration of appointments to boards and commissions. You have for your consideration for individual appointment. Nominated to the City Plan and Zoning Commission is Elizabeth Wally, nominated by Deputy Mayor Pro Tem Medrano. To the Martin Luther King Jr. Community Center Board, Sandra Biggs is nominated by Deputy Mayor Pro Tem Medrano. To the Cypress Waters Municipal Management District, there are several nominations. Lucy Billingsley will fill the owned property in the district, nominated by Councilmember Salazar. Mario Canizares, the initial director, nominated by Councilmember Salazar. Sid Grant is initial director, nominated by Councilmember Salazar. Joel Overton Jr. owns property in district, Councilmember Salazar. Henry Billingsley owns property in district, Councilmember Salazar.
Lucilo Pena, interest in property and district, nominated by Councilmember Salazar. To the Trinity River West Municipal Management District, Phil Romano, owns property and district, nominated by Councilmember Salazar. Stuart Fitz, owns property and district, nominated by Councilmember Salazar. And Larry McGregor, agent of person covered by subsection, nominated by Councilmember Salazar.
Move approval.
Second. It's been moved and seconded. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, so ordered. Madam Secretary, 48.
Item number 48 is authorize the reconstruction on site of three homes for properties located at 2029 East Illinois Avenue in the amount of $93,400, 3322 Alaska Avenue in the amount of $93,400, and 2612 Harston Street in the amount of $93,400.
Mr. Newman?
Thank you, Mayor. Mr. Killingsworth, please. Good morning, Jerry. How are you?
Good morning.
My question goes to the process that we're going through here. One of the three homes are in my district, but there are two other districts involved, so I'll speak to the issues relevant to my district, but they actually apply to the others. What the council is being asked to approve is $93,000 to renovate or rebuild homes?
No. These are reconstruction projects that the council has approved under prior actions up to $93,000. I believe it's $93,400 for replacement homes. So we tear down homes that we cannot repair to the tune of about $50,000 or $55,000 a year and rebuild new homes on those lots.
But, Jerry, the write-off to the council says repairs. It doesn't say rebuild. It says repairs necessary to meet the city's locally adopted housing rehabilitation standards.
Where are you reading from? I'm reading from authorized reconstruction.
On 48, the city council authorization is also required prior to proceeding with reconstruction of the site. Repairs necessary to meet the city's locally.
I'm sorry for the confusion. This is reconstruction of new homes.
So what you're proposing to do is tear down and build totally up from ground up.
Yes, sir. It's a new home on the same lot. That's the requirement under.
So why is it referencing repairs? Repairs necessary to meet the city's.
You got me. It beats me. I don't know. It's intended to be reconstruction.
Totally reconstruction.
Yes, sir.
Okay. All right. Well, it says reconstruction on site, but then it goes on to say conditions exist, repairs necessary to meet the needs locally, and it goes on again to say repairs are not needed and so forth. Okay. All right. Thank you, Mayor.
Sure.
I'll just make the comment that I will be voting no on this, Mayor, because I have concerns about the process that we go through in this, and I can't support it.
Elaborate on your process, Mr. Newman.
I'm uncomfortable about spending $93,000 sight unseen this way, so, sorry. Thank you.
It's been moved and seconded. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Objections, Mr. Newman. That will be noted for the record. Thank you. Madam Secretary, item number three on the addendum.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Item number three is consideration of appointments to the Dallas-Fort Worth International Airport Board of Directors for places 6 and 9.
Mr. Kinney, please.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. We met with Mr. Shear and Ms. Washington earlier this week, interviewed them, and our folk at the Transportation and Environmental Committee, and we had our committee unanimously moved them forward to the council. So with that, I'd like to move approval of the resolution to reappoint Robert Shue and Bernice Washington to serve on the DFW, Dallas-Fort Worth International Airport Board of Directors, places 6 and 9, respectively, for a term to expire on January 31st, 2012, as recommended by the City Council's Transportation and Environmental Committee. Thank you.
Numerous seconds have been noted. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Any opposed, so ordered. Items on number 4 to 17 are all in a similar group. What I'm going to have the Madam Secretary do is read all those into the record, then we'll go down and hit each one of them.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Again, item 4 to 17 relate to authorizing a resolution in support of the Texas Department of Housing and Community Affairs 9% low-income housing tax credit. I will define the item number relating to the entity and property. Item number 4 is for Accord Plaza, located at 1011 South Accord Street. Again, all of these are addendum items. Addendum number 5 is with Atmos Lofts, located at 1900 Jackson Street. Item number 6 is Champion Homes at Coppridge, located at 5542 Maple Avenue. Item number 7 is Evergreen Residences Jackson, located at 2012 Jackson Street. Item number 8 is Evergreen Residences Willow, located at 3800 Willow Street. Item number 9 is Greenhouse at Eastside Apartments, located at 4611 Eastside Avenue. Item number 10 is for Hatcher Square, located at 4600 Cyan Road. Item number 11 is Hillside West Seniors, located at 32 Pinnacle Park Boulevard. Item number 12 is Jackson Square Apartments, located at 1701 Jackson Street. Item number 13 is Kleberg Commons, located at 12700 Kleberg Road. Item number 14 is Prince of Wales SRO Residential Hotel, located at 4515 Live Oak Street. Item number 15 is Sphinx at Longview, located at 4120 Longview Avenue. Item number 16 is Wynwood Seniors Housing, located at 1500 South Sang Boulevard. And item number 17 is Terrace at Founders Square, located at 1400 Englewood Drive and East Tilden Street.
Each of these will require 2 seconds, and by the second, the individual council people certify that they have reviewed not only the materials but additional work to feel comfortable that they can render a judgment on the item itself. Item number 4.
So moved.
Second. It's been moved and seconded by Ms. Hill and by Mr. Natinsky. Oh. Okay. Ms. Hill, do I have another second? Item dies for second. Item number 5. Item number 5. Motion?
Addendum 5.
Item number 4. It's been moved, but there's only 1 second. It dies for a second. I had 1 second. I had a motion and a second. And Carolyn was the second. Okay. Item 4. We went back to item 4. 2 seconds. It dies if there's not the second. Okay, item number 4 then has the 2 seconds. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
I'm sorry, Mr. Kinski, I apologize.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I have concerns about, well, first, if I can get Mr. Zabakowski up here, maybe, or AC, do you want to come up? Just on all of these, I'm going to ask one question collectively, and then I've got a specific concern and question with regards to addendum item number 4. You're looking for help, AC. You need help.
Yes, sir.
My question is, and you and I have had this conversation, I'm still somewhat uncomfortable about it. We have a list of these projects that we're sending down to see which ones may or may not get recommended to be moved forward from the state. And then we're going to get the results of what they think is best in their viewpoint sent back to us. And these projects may or may not have a life beyond that at the city. My concern is that if this council has a preference, for example, some of these are put in a position where you've got competing projects within the same geographical area, and both of them can't move forward. So my concern is that we're recommending approval of a project, or not recommending for approval, but we're giving our support to Austin, which I think has somewhat of an inferral that we're kind of okay with them. And then we're going to get the list back from the state, and then we may or may not deal with them. And I think we can find ourselves in a situation where we've got Project A that we would much prefer to move forward, but Project B got the support of the state. And then since Project A didn't get the support, Project A is off the table, and we're scrambling. So that's my first generalized question on all these. And now your support has shown up in the form of Mr. Killingsworth.
Yes, and thank you for filibustering until you got it. let me just start out with a comment so that you know that I know a little bit about the topic and then give it over to the expert.
I'm afraid that option is long gone.
First of all, I want to make sure that we're aware that this process has changed from last year's to this year, in that given the amount of our population versus the number of projects we have, that we are now in a situation where the applicants are coming to us for our review, as we're doing. But we don't have what we had in the past, is the ability to just stop them at this point here. So that's, you know, we're just reacting to the information that's there and going to be sending that down to the state. There are several options that the council might have in terms of either showing support through your all's actions in terms of financing these projects or not, which will either mean that they're going to be able to be done or not done at all, period. If the council were to choose that they were not going to approve a TIF reimbursement, et cetera, that's another way that it could be handled. Now, this process we're going through is what Jerry McCubbin started talking about, which we believe is the appropriate way to start keeping them moving forward to the state and then let the state do what they do.
I realized in housing committee, and because I work with this every day, that the more I talk, the more it sounded complicated with the way we have to go through everything. And I know I met with individual members of the housing committee, and just based upon the questions that kept coming back, I can recognize how confusing it can be. Let me just sort of tell you what we're trying to do today. We're saying that we've got certain projects that because of the type of projects, the locations, we're okay in recommending that we go forward with the project, and that there are certain requirements for the developers that they have to have to TDHCA by the end of the month. And those are primarily letters of support from the community. And it only requires one at this point. But that just gets them past March 31st, and all they're doing is really anteing up the first chip here and staying in the process. During the month of March and April, and during some of this will shake out in and of itself, in that some projects will choose to remove themselves. But starting in April and May, this council will see each individual project and where those sources of funds are going to have to come from, and you're going to see recommendations from us on which projects that, like you're talking about, Mr. Kaczynski, which projects we think ought to stack up ahead of others based upon the amount of funds that are available. But the council will have the opportunity to vote on every one of them, not because of the preemptive right that we had before under the state regulations because of the two times rule, which we are no longer under here in Dallas, but because every one of these projects are requiring gap funding of some type in order to make the projects work. And because of that gap funding requirement, every deal will come back before council for approval. Right now, there's going to be a shakeout process going on, and while we have 14 today, at the end of March, we may only have 10 or 11. Then you'll start seeing the individual deals and our recommendations. And Mr. Newman brought up something very important. In Mr. Natinsky brings up a lot of things that are important, but in this,
can we have some more help? These two guys need some help from the back.
Last week, Mr. Newman pointed out that even though a particular project had community support, it wasn't the community support that he felt like needed to have
for that project, given the location of the project relative to the other community organizations. But all of that is going to shake out so that before we come to you with a recommendation to put money into a deal, they will have to have all of the appropriate community organizations on board with the project and before you'll see the deal.
Okay. One follow-up question, Mr. Killingsworth, that just to clarify. If Project A and B both go through the process, this shakeout process that you're talking about, and if Project A does not get the support of the program, then the only project that would that the council would be able to fully vet and approve, subject to all its other gap financing, everything else that we can try to cobble together to make the project work, would be Project B. Is that correct? And,
yes,
and we would not have the opportunity under those circumstances to take any action on Project A because it would have been killed in Austin because it didn't make the cut for some reason in Austin.
That's correct.
Okay. And that I may not be able to change the process, but it troubles me that that's the road that we're going down because we're the ones that are closest to the community, know intimately a lot of the issues that have to do with these projects, and Austin is 250 miles to the south, and they're their own little world down there. And so...
Mr. Kinski, can I jump in on your question?
Yeah.
That's fine, dealing with the state process. But Mr. Kinski pointed out something that I'm not sure got addressed, and that is there is a geographic limitation so that there's two projects that fall within one area.
No, I think, Mr. Mayor, that in that case, if we have two, and let's say that we prefer A, from the city's perspective, we would have liked A to go forward, and we send A and B to Austin, and Austin kills A, then the only choice we have left is B or nothing.
And that's where I'm going. I think it's going to be important as we go through this, because it wasn't clear to me, which one of those do we have situations? In other words, when there truly is an A and a B, so that by us if we've got a project here and a project here, and we approve it, Austin approves it or doesn't, Austin's going to make their determination. But it seems to me when it's got to be an either or, when it's truly the A and B, it's got to be either or, we should know that because then this action is even more meaningful. Because we may be in the position of saying, hey, hold it, we only want A considered. Then take B off of the table at this point. So my question then is, where on these 4 through 17 do we have duplications where we are in effect going to give our authority back to Austin? I understand Austin's going to have their authority on a project in North Dallas and South Dallas, and they like one and they won't like it, and we understand that. But I'm getting more at where we could make a determination today that would drive it towards the project that would be preferred by this council as opposed to delegating that responsibility.
Can I answer
the question in two parts? One, we'll be sending down a support letter where the council wants us to send a support letter today. Sometime in the April-May time frame, we would send down a support letter that says, we are recommending this project, and for that gap funding that you show on your sources and uses, that we are recommending this is where that source of funds is coming from. Let's say it is A. And when it gets down to July, when the TDHCA decides which tax credits they're going to approve, and they say, we don't want to do A, but it's within the 1 mile rule, we don't want to do A, we're going to give the tax credits to B. Okay. That knocks out A, even though we recommended it, but it didn't get the tax credits. B got the tax credits, but it came in second. We now have a second bite at the apple because B will have a gap requirement that is going to require a certain amount of funding from the local public entity, one, to gap fund the project, and the second thing is to get the 18 points that they needed. So in that case, it's quite possible that we could come back to the council again, say in August, and say, this project got tax credits. We didn't recommend, the council didn't approve the gap funding part, but it got the tax credits. Do you want to reconsider? Because the one we recommended over here didn't get the tax credits.
So we can go back to Austin and ask them that. Is that what you're saying?
No, we can go. We can, because once they get the tax credits, they've got to require two things are going to happen. If they don't have the gap funding lined up, they got to get the gap funding lined up. They can't close the deal. They can't close the deal unless they get the gap funding from us. And if they don't get the gap funding from us, they don't get the additional 18 points that they need in order to score. So we, in the final analysis, because of the gap funding requirement, are going to be able to say yay or nay on every one of these deals.
Hey, Mr. Tillman, I still don't understand, though, if Project A does not get the tax credit from Austin.
And A and B are both within
one
mile. We
never get a second bite at A. Is that true? Or not?
We don't get a second bite at A.
That's my concern. That is the essence of my concern, is that if we recommend two projects down there, A and B,
and they're both within 1 mile,
and they give the tax credits to B, then you're correct. Then we have an opportunity to cobble together whatever we can try to do to keep A moving forward. But if we would have preferred to have, B, if we would have preferred to have A, we don't have that ability. The project's dead because without the tax credits, we're probably not going to be able to cobble together enough to make that project work. Is that right?
That's correct. But let me complicate the whole thing even more in getting to something that the mayor had asked. It is quite possible that A project that didn't get the tax credits and B got the tax credits, okay? We look at B and we say, we still don't want to do the deal. We don't want to put the gap funding in it. They can't make the deal. What happens then is that the projects that fall out because they can't meet all the requirements for their sources in their scoring, they fall out and projects move up. Mr. Newman had a project in his district last year out in the urban campus at Taylor Farms that was out of the running and ended up with tax credits in September because of all of the fallout before him.
Well,
so,
it wasn't out of the running, Mr. Killingsworth. It was just lower in the list.
It was out of the running until somebody dropped
it. The council had moved it forward, it just hadn't hit, right? It was running in the slow pack.
It had a ranking that was lower, and then as others went out, then the funding got to it. So above the line, below the line, and the line's moving.
So have I really confused the situation? In this case, B is never out of the deal, because if A doesn't get the support that it needs, both in financial, which translates then not only to money but to points, if it doesn't get it, it slips out. That gives B an opportunity to move up. Now, depending on where B is in the scoring, it can move up.
But I guess that's the concern. We send two projects that are both within a mile radius. Okay? Is Texas going to approve one and not approve another because they're within the 1 mile? In other words,
they can, by regulation, they can only approve one, and it's a 1 mile ruling.
Here's my point. If they approve, if this council, we'll use X and Y for a second. X and Y are both within a mile. This council today both approves X and Y. Then Texas will make a determination on either X or Y. The one they don't is out of the game.
Yes and no, because all they're getting is recommendations today at the end of February. They're not making a decision until July. During the month of April and May, after the March shakeout, during the month of April and May, then we will be giving them a final recommendations and actually letters, commitment letters, of where the gap funding is going to come on, which will line up which projects that we're recommending. And that will all occur prior to them making a decision in July. So what I'm saying is the council is going to get to decide how they want to line these up before July. But at the end of the day, the TDHCA is still going
to
make...
Is it fair to say that what we're doing today is...
Philosophically, we agree with it.
It doesn't have much determination.
It just...
This just pushes the process.
Just needs to push the process.
No reason to determine, no reason to try to rank, no reason to try to say A versus B, X versus Y.
Right.
Is that what you're saying?
Yes.
Mr. Salazar.
Thank you, Mayor. And I think today is that each project standing alone, philosophically, we think is a good project. It meets issues regarding affordable housing, its new construction. And what we, like, as you said, Mayor, we just need to move this forward and then...
It's going to come back to us. And then at that point, we can decide if there's an A and or B, or maybe if it just comes back B and it's not good in the location that we want it, we can still decide not to do that. I think the concern that was at the committee when this came into housing for a second time was that we want to try and keep tax credit within the city of Dallas. And if we do have projects that we can work with that have scored well, you know, at the end of the day, you know, such as the one in Mr. Newman's district last year, which initially didn't get it but ended up getting it because other projects couldn't meet the different requirements, criteria, or the stars didn't align for them, whether in Austin or here, then other projects, we hope, within the city are able to be funded. I will tell you that this is a process that we will be looking at again in the future. When we do have the ability to make a decision, we had yesterday, Ms. Davis and I received recommendations of the Permanent Affordable Housing Task Force, which you asked to be created, and we both co-chaired, and we do have a report we're going to bring back to the housing and back to the council, where we can be creative in ways of working with the tax credit developers to address a lot of our needs that we have in the city. So today I would urge council to even take up 4 to 17 and say, unless there's a request from a councilman to remove one, to just approve all of them as far as recommending support at this stage, subject to coming back in a later stage and then reviewing them and then deciding whether they're going to move forward, continuing that support through July. Would that be a fair assessment?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Okay.
So I'll make that motion, Mayor.
Let me hold that for a second. Do you want to talk in general or a particular item?
I'd like to speak generally, if that's okay, Mr. Mayor. And would you prefer us when we come to the individual
Let's try to get all of the general comments out of the way, then we'll come deal with it. That's the suggestion I'm making.
That's fine. Jerry, you've, I think, addressed my questions and just the concerns about going forward, recommending these, and I think the mayor's concern is well taken. If we don't step in and let the state know the projects we care most about, then we run the risk of not getting those projects. But let me just make sure I understand the process. Today we're making a recommendation for all of these, a slate of projects. It's simply a recommendation, moving it forward to the state. The state will make its own initial recommendation. Then these items will come back to the city so that we can address them a couple of months from now and that we can more specifically focus on whether or not particular projects are ones that we support, don't support, have concerns with, take them to the community, etc. Then the state in July will have an opportunity to make their final determination.
That's correct.
Okay. Just wanted to make sure I had that right. Mr. Mayor, I'm going to hold my comments about some of the specific projects for the individual items.
Ms. Davis, general comment or specific item?
General.
Go.
Thank you, Mayor. First of all, you know, I want to say a couple of things. Even though we're asking to move these projects forward, and I will be supporting that, I think that these projects build communities, number one. I think they also help a blighted area. It strengthens those that particular area. So even though we got 14 of them on the table, they're all in different districts. And as a council member, I'll be supporting. I got only two in my district, but they weigh a mile apart from each other. One is on the other side, and one is on in the South Dallas Square Park area. But even though, Jerry, none of these that we're moving forward with, they don't have to get approved at all. Am I correct?
That's correct.
Okay. And if none of them get approved, then we lose the risk here in Dallas of losing the money. Am I correct?
Yes, that would be a correct statement.
Okay, so we could lose the money. But the other thing, even though the fact that 14 does not get the tax credit, and even though they have a gap, they got gap issues, they still can move forward with that project.
they can move forward with the project, and then they have a limited amount of time to try to find that money.
But regardless, they could move forward.
That's correct.
Okay. I just want to make that clear. Because we're not supporting them, they still can move forward with the project and still get the project done. They just have to go somewhere else to find the funding.
That's correct.
Okay, then. The other thing is that with these particular projects, we talk about the 18% they need from the city. I've known some that did not get the 18 points that from the city, but they went on forward with the project, and the project is up and done. Am I correct? There are some. Did not get that. The city said, okay, we didn't want to support this because we didn't like it. It didn't get its 18 points, but they went on and made it through the project. They finished their project. So I just don't want my colleagues to just think because the city says, well, we don't like this one, that it cannot be built. It can still move forward through the process. Okay, and the last one is that when we take a look at, for example, I had one in my district, did not make the first round. But it came back and waited a year, and it made the round, and they got their tax credits, and now they're moving forward. That can happen, can it not?
Yes, but yes, they scored the second year.
Okay. And so even though we might not select these individuals or these nonprofit or housing for-profit, they can wait a year and then come back. Can they not, Jerry?
Yes, they can just keep coming back every year.
Every year. They can keep coming back each and every year. Okay, Mr. Mayor, thank you so much.
Thank you. Ms. Margolin, General?
I just want to address the question raised by the mayor, Mr. Natinsky, about the one-mile issue, having projects within a mile. And my question is it possible in any formal way for us to state a preference to the state so that they know that we prefer one over the other so that we don't automatically lose one by default if we don't have to?
Ms. Margolin, that is what we will be seeking from this council in the April-May time frame after we're able to vet out whether or not these projects have all of the community support that the various council members' community thinks they need to have relative to that project. After the projects that have fallen out, and what we have left in the way of monies in order to support the remaining projects.
I understand that, but wondering, could a letter go with these applications saying we know we're submitting two within a mile, we prefer this one?
Yes, you could, but I don't think that's where we are today.
Okay.
Yeah, I just sort of lost control of the microphone earlier, but anyway, I'll finish up quickly. I'm not trying to change the process, Jerry or Mr. Salazar, because I respect the work that your committee has done, but I'm sort of questioning because I hear that the indication of support that we're doing today is sort of perfunctory, and the process can go ahead without it, and that we can change our mind. And we can change projects later and so forth. So I'm wondering what the sincere validity is of us voting today to support these projects. Can they not proceed in Austin at all unless we do this? Or
there are a couple of letters of support that are required. I think that the city recommending which projects they're going to support and not support will lend some deal of credibility to the projects that might not be there otherwise.
So by giving a letter of support today, what you're saying is that we are lending, to use your words, a higher level of credibility to a particular project that in the end we may not even want to survive the project because we may have a competing one that we really would rather move forward. And
that That's right. And what I'm saying is because of the time constraints that we were put under this year, whereas last year we had another 30 days to get to a point, plus we were operating under the two times rule, and you could kill the deal at the end of March. We don't have that choice today. Let me make one comment about, let me quantify this. If you, at the end of the day, April or May, decided, I really love 10 of these projects, and by the way, there's some great projects in there this time in terms of type and locations, and I just love 10 of these deals, we're not going to get 10 deals because in the whole North Texas region, based upon the tax credit allocations, there's probably only going to be about 8 projects funded, looking at where the cutoff would be. And right now, in that 8 projects, I think we have about 4 above the line. At the end of the day, no matter how many we end up recommending, there's probably only going to be 3, 4, or 5 from Dallas that are going to get tax credits.
All right. Mr. Mayor, are we going to take these? I'm not sure. Yes. I understood Mr. Salazar's.
I'll try to do a motion for all of them with the exception of
I'm going to take individual.
Okay. All right. That's fine. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Okay. Did you want to add anything else, Jerry? You okay? Now, let's go down through them, but I'm going to kind of ask one question. Are there any of these where any of the council people have an objection to them?
Yes, sir. Yes.
Ms. Newman, you do. Okay, which one is that? That's 17, Mr. Natinsky, which is yours?
Mr. Number 17, Mayor, I have an objection.
That's fine. We'll get them. It's listed. Okay. I just want to know where there's going to be objections. Mr. Natinsky? Okay.
And I think, Mayor, there's a speaker who signed up for 17.
That's why I was going to grab it. Okay. 17, we know we've got objection. Let's deal with that first. Would you call the speaker, Madam Secretary?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Before we can I mention one thing? Please understand that item number 4 has a staff denial on it, as opposed to the rest of these have an approval. I don't know how that's
I understand. I just wanted to get what was on the table.
So we'll vote accordingly.
Yep. Okay.
The speaker for addendum item number 17, John Barr. Sir, you will be allowed 3 minutes to speak. You'll notice the light at the podium turn red.
Yes, ma'am.
Thank you.
Mr. Mayor, members of the council, my name is John Barr, 203 East Colorado Boulevard. I'm an attorney, and I speak here today for myself and Methodist Hospital. We're against this project in our area, and let me tell you why. Back in 2000, Ms. Miller came to us and asked for each shareholder or stakeholder in the area to contribute $10,000 each. I contributed $10,000. The businesses in my area contributed $10,000 each to bring the Urban Land Institute into Dallas to do a survey over what would be the best for the North Oak Cliff area. This proposal runs completely afoul of everything we've done for the last 10 years. We'd ask you to vote to disapprove this project at this time, and we'd ask for that. I only know of one homeowners association, the Oak Cliff Homeowners Association, that joins me in this, and I've been asked by 3 other property members to speak on their behalf, and Dr. Mansfield has asked that I carry his proxy to you here today. Thank you.
Ms. Newman, do you want to comment at 17? We'll deal with it.
Can I make a motion?
Please.
Council members, there are 3 projects in my respective district. I've met with each of the 3 developers two times at least, gone through them significantly. In this particular item, which is item number 17, I've thoroughly vetted this with the surrounding property owners. Thank you very much for being here, Mr. Barr. You own a significant amount of property in the area. You're a stakeholder in the area. He referenced Methodist Hospital, that I've had conversations at length with their management team. The overwhelming feedback is that this is not the highest, best use for the property that is proposed here. I make this recommendation very carefully, and so therefore, Mayor, I move that in item number 17, we deny this resolution of support.
Okay. 2 seconds on that. Again, each of these seconds certify that the council members review. It's been moved, and there are ample seconds for denial on 17. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any objections to that? Okay. One objection. It'll note on number 17, Mrs. Hill objected to the motion, therefore was in favor of the project.
Excuse me, Mr. Mayor, would you clarify who made the second motion?
It was Mr. Zinski and Mr. Allen, and Mr. Kadena.
Thank you.
Okay. With that, let's move up to number four then. I think, Mr. Salazar, you made a motion on that one.
Well, I take that back, Mayor, because I was making a motion for all of them, but if you decide to take them individually, then that's fine.
Let's deal with number four then, because it requires 2 seconds.
Well, I could suggest that we can do a motion on, with the exception of 4, 5, 7.
As long as there's no other objections that certify that each of the individuals that do the seconds on the grouping of them.
I would make the motion and then do the second for other than 4, 5, and 7.
Okay, so you by making the motion, you reviewed each of the items. I don't think we can do that. Let's go to four. Number four. Do I have a motion on number four? Mr. Tipsy, please.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. My concern with number four is that I just don't think it makes the basic test. We've had several public hearings down here, and I've talked to Ms. Cabrano, and I know that she has concerns over this particular thing. When you've got a project that has lack of overwhelming public support, and you've got staff recommending that we not move forward with it, I'm going to make a motion that we deny it.
Okay. I'm sorry, Mr. Nikinski.
I made a motion to deny.
Okay. To take that motion to deny, then, Mr. Atkins, do you want to withdraw your motion?
Yes.
Okay. Motion's withdrawn, and I assume the 2 seconds are withdrawn then?
Yes.
They're withdrawn. So the motion on the table, then, is Mr. Nikinski's to deny.
Mm-hmm.
I've got 1 second. I need 2 seconds to deny. Yeah, we can defer it without it, but 2 seconds is nine.
I'll second it.
Okay, second it. Motion and 2 seconds. Ms. Madrona, do you want to add anything on this one?
Yes, Mr. Kellingsworth. If you'll explain the staff denial.
The staff denial on this project was solely related to the lack.
I can't hear you. I'm sorry.
Was solely related to the lack of community support, and it seemed to be an overwhelming. And even though it's permanent supportive housing, it would contribute to our 5-year plan for 700 units. At the end of the day, the community didn't want it there, and that's why we recommended denial.
I had received a couple of emails with maybe the potential of maybe getting some community support. Has that changed at all?
As of right now, we know of nothing that would change the community support. There have been discussions, as you know, of a possible move of a police station to the first floor of that building, but there's a lot of ifs associated with that.
Thank you.
Ms. Pendron, I thought the community had viewed this differently. Is that not right?
From my understanding, at least at the last housing committee meeting, there was a group of community or neighbors, and at that point, they weren't quite satisfied with the project. Since that time, I had received some emails and a couple of phone calls of some possible changes. Mr. Kellingsworth mentioned the storefront, police storefront, with the possibility of moving on the first floor. But I have not heard anything since if that was a done deal or was that a deal breaker for the community. I have not heard.
The developers are meeting with the community again either Thursday or Friday.
Thursday? You guys
want to
come?
Ron.
I have John Greenan with Central Dallas CDC, who would be a partner in this project, coming down.
Yes, sir. John Greenan, thank you very much. It's simply a case that a new proposal has been presented by Larry Hamilton to the community, but the vote has not taken place. The vote will take place over the next couple of days. So, in fact, although we have heard from various members of the community, we have not actually had the democratic process of the community association go forward yet, and we will not know that until Friday at the earliest.
Do we know of any of the community or neighbors here, Mr. Kellingworth? I mean,
I do not know.
Mayor, I have not heard, and that's just my comment. I hadn't heard.
Jerry, what's our limitation if we held this one? You mean if you recommend that it go forward at this point?
No, if we just deferred it until beyond Friday or anything else.
Well, if you defer it, that's fine. The developers still have to get these two these support letters, one from the community itself and one from a legislator that has to be into Austin by April the 1st. So you can't. I'm sorry, March the 1st. So you could defer this item, and you could defer it.
Mr. Tipsky, Ms. Medrano? You're still where you are?
Yeah.
Fair enough. Ms. Rodone, do you want to comment on this?
I just wanted to say that there is a little bit of confusion in our agenda, because when I pull up item 4, it says item 5, but it does say Atmos, so I'm assuming that even though it says addendum item 5, that we are talking about the Atmos.
No, 4 is the Ackard, which is the old plaza.
Oh, well,
5
okay.
is the Atmos.
Well, what comes up on my computer when I click on addendum number 4 is addendum item 5.
When I click on 4, the same thing is on my.
So I'm not really, I've just lost what we're even talking about.
And I think they put something in.
When you've got addendum 4, you bring up Atmos? Because I'm showing
addendum,
the
answer. Addendum 4 and addendum 5 on my computer are both addendum 5 Atmos.
Yep.
Where's the paper, Mayor? Where's our paper? I know.
Penel, the three of us were the only ones with paper.
I got my paper. Right there.
Yeah. No, we.
I'm still showing. Okay, Mr. Salazar, did you want to add anything?
Just briefly, Mayor, I think if Ms. Medrano would have moved to defer it, and I think to give the opportunity for the community to see if they can resolve issues with the developer, I think that would be a very positive idea. This is a significant building across from City Hall that addresses issues regarding housing, affordable housing, and certainly that has an opportunity of working with the neighbors, and certainly I would entertain supporting them, giving that opportunity for them to vote by Friday. I don't know if Mr. Drano wants to do that, but
I think the community issue is a significant one. I've been through, sat through some of those community meetings where there's real issues that are being raised. If the support can be gotten, this is going to be one of the key projects to get the permanent supporting housing that we need. So I'm a little bit like Mr. Salazar. I hate to have the opportunity go away. At the same time, we've got to be conscious of the community. So if the community had changed their view, or there's an opportunity to change the view, that would help all of us in terms of meeting a goal that we all set important on that permanent supporting housing, and becomes important for what we're doing at the bridge and other expenditures and other efforts throughout the city. So with that.
Is Mr. Connor willing to defer for the next voting
assembly? I would be, but Jerry, how would that impact process for Austin? And it would have to be the community support that surrounds the Ackard Plaza project, and not just solely a letter from someone, in that area. I would think that it would have to be solidified by a neighborhood group that is going to be impacted by the project, not solely a letter. And so I guess that would be my question. Would it just be a letter from someone nearby the area, or would it be a neighborhood, established neighborhood association.
It's going to have to be, an established neighborhood association that would have to provide that support letter. And just keep in mind that our letter of support at this point is not required. It's just our letter of support at this point is not a requirement between now and March the 1st. Our support later on of funding that would allow the project to go forward is going to be a requirement for them to score enough to fill the gap and meet the score. But now it's not a requirement, right? What they've got to do between now and March the 1st is get a letter of support. So even though you defer today, if they get the letter of support that they need, the two letters of support that they need between now and this weekend, to where it's in Austin on March the 1st, they've met the first hurdle.
As a corollary to that, could you take a motion to send this forward subject to you reviewing, and again, I think we're all concerned about one letter that's from one association and take it in, but some motion that would put the burden on you not to forward it unless there is demonstrated
I'm fine with
substantial
that.
Community support. And I think the substantial as opposed to a single letter is where I know we've been in a number of meetings. I think the concern is there could be one piece of it, but there's several different community groups, and I'm not saying I have all of them, but at least substantial.
I would agree to that, Mr. Greenan. I mean, I don't know where you are in the process of engaging and meeting with the different community neighborhood associations. Could you just
The neighborhood association, whose boundaries include the property at 1011 South Akron, is the Cedars Neighborhood Association. Mr. Larry Hamilton has had several meetings with them. Certainly, there are people that object to the project. There are also people that support it. But as a practical matter, without a letter of support from the Cedars Neighborhood Association, the project has no practical possibility of receiving an award of tax credits from the state of Texas. So unless that letter happens between now and March 1st, the project is dead. I mean, that's just the practical consequences. So it's really that one letter from that one neighborhood association, which includes the area, that's the key to the project possibly getting an award of tax credits.
And my question to you is, you've met any indication of what they will be doing?
You know, Larry Hamilton has had the vast bulk of these meetings, and it's really difficult to judge the results of a vote before it happens, as
sure.
I'm sure all of you know much better than I do. So we don't know.
Okay. Thank you, Mayor.
Ms. Davis, you want to comment on this one?
Yes, I want to, Jerry. Do they, and they also, meaning the people in Austin, they have community meetings here also across the street.
Yes, ma'am. I believe it's scheduled, it's the middle of April.
Uh-huh. I think so. I don't know.
Yeah, it's the middle of April. I don't know why, 14, 15, 16, somewhere along there falls into my mind. It's in my briefing.
Individuals can come to those meetings for it.
That's right.
Okay.
See, this is just all of that process before they decide in July to award tax credits.
Okay.
Mr. Tipsy, would you be willing to amend your motion then to allow this to go forward subject to Mr. Killingsworth feeling comfortable that there's substantial community support?
Yeah, I would, Mayor, so, Jerry, you have the ability to not forward the letter on Monday, I think, whatever the first is.
Yes, sir.
And I'm going to leave it up to you. I think it has to be strong, substantial, however you want, you know, not just 5149 support from the community.
Yeah, we're in effect saying if you see that substantial support, forward it on. If you don't, then you can't forward it on. So, all right. So we're really putting
it
on your shoulders.
I think it's fair.
You comfortable?
Yes.
Okay.
Mayor,
I will so agree on my second.
Okay, and then the second.
I think it's Hunter. Somebody.
Okay. And they're amended. The 2 seconds are amended.
And Mayor, we do have someone from the community right now.
Showed up late.
Okay. Why don't we just leave it where we are? I think, again, Mr. Killingsworth is going to have to do some work on this. All those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye. Any opposed, so ordered. Item number 5 on the addendum, there is a conflict of interest. Mr. Perkins, there's a conflict of interest on that. He'll excuse himself from the chamber. And with that, a motion. Ms. Hunt has moved to approve it.
Seconds
from Ms. Hill and Ms. Davis. Mr. Nitzke, do you want to make a comment?
Yeah, I've got a concern on this one, Mr. Mayor. And I don't know if it's Jerry or Carl or AC or whoever, but it's my understanding, and you feel free to correct me if I'm in error, that when this particular project was, I'm going to call, transferred from Forest City to Atlas, along with that came the obligation that the Atlas would not apply for tax credits as part of moving the project forward. And so my question is, well, our city attorney now has a conflict. Should we be acting on this if that is not there? Now, I know that there's still a window, Mr. Killingsworth, to where that approval may be coming forward. But from what I understand, there's probably not any indication that it's going to come forward. So are we, again, recommending something to Austin to get tax credits that there may be a legal tough going on that I'm not sure the city wants to be in the middle of that?
Well,
who wants to answer that question?
Let me take a stab at it. We've got ifs on every one of these.
No, I only have ifs on 3. The rest of them I don't have ifs on.
Well, we have ifs on all of them because of they all require gap financing. In this particular case, in that transfer agreement, you've got one side that's saying, we think we can do this, and the other side is saying, we don't think you can do this. Now, whether or not they decide over the next 30 days, and I'm going to say they're going to need to decide over the next 30 days where that all falls in play, because that's just layered over the complexity of the fact that we've got 4 projects that are in that 1 mile rule that these 2 projects are embedded in, but not only that, but the Hamiltons have 2 projects that one of them is going to knock the other one out because of the 1 mile rule besides the Jackson Street issue. So all of that has got to sort of play out, and we're sort of giving these guys 30 days to figure out what you're going to do. Play your cards, but, you know, we're going to be coming back the 1st of April with some recommendations. And that's what we were talking about earlier, is about part of this fallout. But right now, you're absolutely right. There's an interpretation of what's in that transfer agreement as to whether or not the Hamiltons can go forward their partnership on this project as a tax credit.
Well, I've got serious concerns about this one because of that, and then we're overlaying this 1 mile thing. We've got all these things that are being layered in there, and I'm not sure I'll be able to support this, but I'll listen to somebody else. Thank you.
Mr. Salazar, please.
Again, you know, what we want to do is at least to see, first of all, I think Jerry's correct, this 30-day window where they're going to have to work out their issues. And my concern is that if we start saying no to all of these, it's not sending a very positive message, because I think we do have an investment in this building. Whether it gets funded or not, we do have an interest in developing our downtown, continuing the opportunities to bring in units and also affordable units, and, you know, say no at this stage when really we don't have to say no. We can say, let's move these forward, see where are they going to get traction in Austin, are they going to be able to work out their issues, because if we say no to all of these projects, well, just say you're out of business. And
That's not the message we're sending from Dallas. We're saying that we want these units, we want new construction, because if we decide we're not going to do the new construction, then we need to go ahead and change our philosophy and say we're going to go ahead and put money into renovating all those apartments all up in North Dallas and South Dallas, and we don't want to do that because this is new construction. And this downtown building the Atmosphere building, this is an opportunity if it can be done that we can have more units in downtown and have more affordable units downtown. I think it's kind of a mixing philosophy to say, no, we don't want to do it. We don't have to make this decision today other than philosophically, if it can be a project we could look at supporting, and in 30 days we'll know for sure whether we're even going to have to make that decision at all. And I'm going to defer to Ms. Hunt to make whatever motion she's going to make at this time. Thank you, Mayor.
Ms. Hunt.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. The fact is this is a project that adaptively reuses an existing building in downtown Dallas, and it uses it for affordable housing, which we simply do not have enough of in downtown. I understand the point that there may be contractual obligations between two private parties, and the fact is I think those two parties have to address those legal issues. I don't think it's appropriate at this point for the city to start making legal determinations about contracts between two private parties. So I do think this is an important project. I'm supporting this as I'm supporting the other downtown proposals because I think that the state has a good set of objective criteria to evaluate these projects. And I think that in addition to that, we will have an opportunity, as Jerry has said probably 20 times at this point, to review these projects again before there is final approval. So I do move to approve this, Mr. Mayor.
It's already been moved and seconded. Mr. Hitzke?
You convinced me that we're going to have 20 more bites of the apple, Jerry.
All those in favor signify by saying aye. Any opposed? So ordered. Six. Motion on six.
Mayor, on number six, I wanted to correct the address.
Okay, please.
And Susan,
if you want to make a motion, just make it in the motion.
Well, I want to make sure I have the correct address. If I could just ask Susan Kindren, would you please correct me? I have it as 5602 Maple. Is that correct?
Yes, Councilwoman. And just to be specific, so it's on the record, it's Lot 7, Block A, over 5708. But it is 5602.
Correct. It's not the 5542. It's 5602. Lot what?
Lot 7, Block A, over 5708.
Do you want to make a motion?
Yes. Mayor, I'd like to approve addendum item number 6 with the correction of an address of 5602. Lot 7, Block
8.
There's going to be a posting problem
because
the posting is
55. Okay, we'll hold on. Number 7. Motion on 7. Motion on 7. And moved, it's been seconded. Mr. Salazar and Mr. Atkins, all those in favor signify by saying aye. Mr. Tiske, please.
I'm on a roll here, Mr. Mayor.
Go get him.
But this will be the last one on this little segment that I'll do this, but. I'm going to go along with this because of Mr. Killingsworth, 20 more bites at the apple that we're going to get on this. But, you know, when you go through and you read this, colleague, or is it an elephant? I'm not sure, Jerry. When you go through and you read this, you know, my concern are a couple things. One, we're again, within this 1 mile, you know, radius issue. When I read it at first and I saw it as, you know, SROs, multifamily, it was kind of okay. When I dug into the background material and found out that these are more dormitory style units with rooms and common bathrooms out in the hall and so forth, you know, I have a problem saying that that's the transitional type of SRO that we want to move people back into the mainstream with. I know I'm editorializing a little bit there, but that's my prerogative. And you know, the last is this particular project is going to need $4 million worth of city help.
And so I'm going to vote for it, but I don't want the applicant in any way to believe that because I'm voting for it today that I'm going to be on board when the cobbled-together financing comes before the council later. I'm not going to necessarily be against it. But that's a big chunk of money the city's going to have to put forward to get this project moving forward, and I do have reservations about it. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Yeah. I think you point out a good point that some of this is going to have to be an allocation of funds. Ms. Hunt, do you want to speak on this?
I wanted to make one comment, Mr. Mayor. With regards to these projects that are in downtown, particularly those in my district, I do want to make clear that my support today for these projects is to move them forward in the process, because I need to hear from my constituents in downtown. I think we need to have a conversation about what our vision is for affordable housing downtown, for SROs in downtown. And so while I am supporting moving these forward, these items forward, I do want to say not only will these items come back to us for funding issues, for gap funding reasons, but also I think it's important for us to reach out to the community, for us to be thoughtful about a larger plan, as I know you are, Jerry, but I want us to be thoughtful about a larger plan for downtown Dallas with regards to affordable housing and SROs and similar housing opportunities. So I just wanted to make my position very clear. Yes, moving forward today, but as these come back to us in a couple of months, it may be that having spoken to the community, I cannot support some of these projects at that point. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
I, too, just want to go on record saying I believe in letting the process go forward. My personal beliefs as far as at least District 10 and what I've seen in that, tax credits have not worked. And I would not embrace any tax credits of District 10. So you know where I'm coming from. But I believe in letting the process go forward. So.
Ms. McDonald, please.
Thank you, Mayor. Jerry, where did this rank in terms of the ranking?
Yes, we can hear quite a lot.
It ranked... I can't remember if this one ranked in the middle of the pack. I don't have my briefing materials with me, but there were two projects submitted by Mr. Green, who is sitting over here, and both of them in your, the other one is in your district.
Mm-hmm.
And this one seemed, I want to say it was around 30 out of
57. I was going to say 31.
Yeah, somewhere in that in that range.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. It's been moved and seconded. This is item number 7 on the addendum. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, so ordered. Motion in regard to number 8. 8.
District 2. That was it?
That was 7. We just did 7. We're now on 8.
That's what I was asking. I'm sorry. On number 8, what was their ranking?
Both of those projects, item number 7 and 8, ranked middle of the pack out of the 57 to the bottom third. And I don't remember specifically where Willow was related to Jackson Street.
I move to approve, please.
It's been moved. Mr. Jackson seconded and Mr. Salazar seconded. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed, so ordered. Something. Item number nine is next up on the hit parade.
Move to approve.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded by Mr. Atkins and by Mr.
Salazar.
All those in favor signify by saying aye. Ms. Hunt, I'm sorry.
Mr. Mayor.
As
I've discussed with my colleagues in the housing committee meetings, East Dallas is really oversaturated with both boarding houses and tax credit projects. And I am on record being extremely supportive of affordable housing. I'm also very much in favor of ensuring that it does not oversaturate an area, because when it does, it becomes a problem for the community. And we've seen that in East Dallas, and I'm going to be sharing with my colleagues this week a map
that really shows the concentration, and I think we'll, I think you'll all be surprised to see that it really lights up like a Christmas tree in the areas that, that Ms. Medrano and I represent. That being said, there was a community meeting regarding this particular project last week. Now, in conversing just now with some of the community leaders who were at that meeting, they have not had an opportunity yet to go back to their neighborhood, their relative neighborhood associations, to get feedback. So at this point, I am very, very tentatively supporting moving this forward in the process. But I have extreme reservations about putting a single more project of this sort in East Dallas. So my support is right on the line here, and I'm going to wait and listen very closely to what my community leaders discuss with their neighborhood associations. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you. Now, Mr. McDonald, please.
Thank you. As Ms. Hunt said, there was a community meeting last week, and they will continue to there were about four items that came out in the community meeting that this group is looking forward to working with that community, in addition to another neighborhood association just south of this community. So I do believe that they're on the right track in terms of this project, and I would, again, want to make that the motion, and thank you for the second.
Thank you. Nine. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, so ordered. Item number 10, a motion. Ms. Davis?
I approve to move this item forward.
Okay. And seconds for Mr. Salazar and Ms. Hill. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, so ordered. Item number 11. Mr. Newman?
Yes, Mayor and Council members, this project is within the urban campus. This is a project of almost 200 acres in Oak Cliff, bordering Interstate 30 in Westmoreland. I've spoken about the urban campus many, many times over the last year and a half. I am supporting this as a component to the overall development in Oak Cliff and part of the urban campus. Therefore, I am supporting this, and I move approval.
It's been moved. It's been seconded by Mr. Natinsky and Ms. Hill. All those in favor, Ms. Davis, I'm sorry. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? So ordered. Item number 12. Motion? Ms. Hunt has moved it. Mr. Atkins and Mr. Salazar have seconded. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Any opposed? So ordered. Item number 13, a motion. Mr. Atkins?
Second.
And it's been seconded by Ms. Hill and by Mr. Salazar. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Any opposed? So ordered. Item number 14, a motion.
The district
14.
14.
This is a different category, correct? This one is
This is an at-risk category, separate category for projects that are already affordable housing.
And ranked pretty high. So
and
I
ranked very high, yeah.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded by Mr. Atkins and Mr. Salazar. Ms. Hunt, I believe you had a question.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Jerry, on this project, that's again in East Dallas, this is rehabilitation, right?
Yes.
Okay, and this is not going to increase the number of units. It's simply going to rehab the units that are currently there.
That's correct.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Mayor.
It has been moved and seconded. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, so ordered. Item number 15, a motion. Ms. Davis, please.
How you doing? I move.
We're moving forward.
I would like to move this item forward, please.
Okay. It's seconded with laughter by Ms. Hill and Mr. Atkins. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, so ordered. And mercifully, item number 16, our last one. Mr. Newman, all eyes turned.
I'll make a motion here in a second, but I want to make a comment because this particular project is right adjacent to Wynwood Village Shopping Center and Zang in Illinois in that neighborhood, and it's had some consternation in the neighborhood. the Wynwood neighborhoods that surround this exist. There's an existing tax-credited deal in place, and at first brush, I was against this proposal, as were the neighborhoods. As we went through several meetings with Mr. Killingsworth and Jerry, I very much appreciate your time bringing me up to speed to understand this process. I came to the conclusion, as did the neighborhoods, that a new construction, tear down all these old units, and a new construction in a phased and orderly way, with a seniors portion first, closest to Wynwood North neighborhood and the shopping center, would be the lesser of the two evils as it relates to the neighborhood's perception. They're just very concerned, the neighborhoods surrounding there are very concerned about the current condition of the property. It's owned by Bank of America and their community development redevelopment efforts, and they're just wondering what is the long-term effect going to be. And so after that series of discussions, including the neighborhood myself, I'm wanting to move the process forward in this case because I believe that as a councilman and as a council, we should telegraph to the proposed developer where we are going to be down the road, as opposed to leading anyone forward, misleading them. So in this case, I would recommend to the council that we move this process forward. By no means does that mean it's an absolute, because they're asking for money, city money later on, but we do have some tentative neighborhood support and mine as well. Move approval.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded by Mr. Caraway and by Mr. Salazar. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, so ordered. Madam Secretary, could you read in item number 18, please?
Okay. We still have addendum item number 6, Mr.
Mayor. I'm sorry. I apologize. It's been communicated that that can go forward with a motion that amends the address, please, Ms.
Thank you, Mayor. I'd like to move approval for item number 6 with a correction of the address as 5602, Block 7, Lot A over 5708.
The motion and the seconds are from?
Can we
yes, we're fine on it. This is a voidable action, it's not a void action.
Okay. Mayor, I believe that's Lot A, Block 7.
Okay. And then I need seconds.
It's just correcting.
Ms. Hill has seconded. Mr. Atkins has seconded. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, so ordered. Item number 18.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Item number 18 will also require two votes. Authorize a historic preservation tax exemption for the Stanley Marcus House located at 10 Nonsuch Road for a 10-year period on 100% of the land and structure value.
Mr. Kinane, please.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Move to approve.
Second, Doctor.
It's been moved and seconded by Mr. Newman and by Mr. Atkins. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, so ordered. With that, we will recess and then come back for our afternoon zoning cases. We'll count on coming back at 1 o'clock. There will be a brief executive session in regard to the City of Dallas versus the Museum of the American Railroad. I think in advance of that, Mr. Allen, you wanted the floor? Uh-oh, watch out.
Recess at 11:45.
Stay away from Mr. Allen.
Is it the wire? Jerry, no. Don't do it, Jerry. Jerry, don't. Don't do it, Jerry.
Ladies and gentlemen, everyone around this horseshoe knows that the Lake Island Wildcats, especially the Lake Island Drumline, is the finest. I've heard some rumblings out there from other people that have been talking about it. Now I'm going to do a throwdown. I want a throwdown. If you man or woman enough to come down here and talk trash, come down here and talk trash. If you're going to talk trash, you better come to play. Gonna talk trash, you better put some weight on. Yeah.
You know, somebody's gonna use this.
What?
Call 911. Call 911.
What's this?
You tell me why you won't take on the Lake Island Wildcat Grub like Catch Your Breath, sir. That's about right, Catch My Breath. Let me tell you something. Skyline got the best drum line in the whole city of Dallas. And we're going to beat up them Lake Island Wildcats, and we're going to knock out. I want to hear that.
You know what? I have the best magic school in the country, Sammy. It is known. It is known for its band, its academics, and its leadership. So, guys, you don't have a chance. You don't have a chance.
I tell you what, I'm going to bring Skyline and the Drumline to Dallas City Hall and challenge Lake Highland,
Poundview,
Adamson, right here for a Drumline drum off.
Okay, I keep telling you, I got the best magnet school in the country. By the way, academic. But you are. I'm going to have to butt you out because I'm going to win.
I tell you what we're going to do. March the 11th, 11 o'clock.
What time?
11 o'clock. Be there at B Square. Right here at City Hall. Because what we got, we're going to have a drum off. We're going to announce during a press conference. Because we got something out there. Y'all remember last year, March for Respect? You remember when the Lake Highlands High School drum line came down to City Hall? That's what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
We're going to have a press conference. We're going to bring in Addison also, their drum line. And we're going to promote March for Respect, which is March 27th this year. But what we're going to do, we got the number one drum line, Lake Island Wild. Looks like I'm in a good mood. March 11th, 11 o'clock, you better be here, you don't want to miss it. Oh man,
wow.
Have you ever heard the word Bandy Rooster?
It's like you say that, not always busted. It is going to be the Town D Magnet School defeat.
Okay, March 11th, 11 o'clock, is that right? March 11th.
And Mr. Zinski, in the spirit of the last several minutes, it's now 11:49, January 24th. The City Council will now go into closed session under Section 551.071 of the Texas Open Meetings Act to receive advice and to consult with the City Attorney on the following matters: the City of Dallas versus the Museum of the American Railroad. We'll be back at 1 o'clock. Okay. Why don't we begin our afternoon session? There are two items on the consent agenda, 49 and 50. If I can get those read into the record, and then the speakers, and we'll get a motion.
Item number 49 is a public hearing regarding an application for and an ordinance granting a historic district overlay on property zoned R-7.5A single family district on the east side of Nonsuch Road between Hillside Drive and West Lake Avenue. Item number 50 is a public hearing regarding a City Council authorized hearing on property zoned industrial manufacturing with consideration being given to a TH-3A townhouse district or an R-5A single-family district on the north and south sides of Amos Street, west of Crossman Avenue, and an ordinance granting an R-5A single-family district. Do you have any announcements? We have an announcement.
We have 12?
We have 9. Mm-hmm. But we still have...
Yes, sir. Just one of these cases does require a three-quarter vote due to opposition by more than 20% of the land area. But that would be the only caveat here. We need 12 members to support a consent motion.
Is there a move?
Are we going to move it?
Yeah.
Ms. Salva.
This item requires a three-quarters vote. I'm just making sure we have enough people here.
We
have
enough?
Okay. Okay. I move to close the public hearing to move approval.
Oh, wait. I need to have comments.
We got 12. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10.
Are there any citizens in the audience that would like to speak into the item, reference the items that are in opposition to the CPC recommendation to approve the items? Any citizens in the audience that would like to speak on the items read into the record in opposition of the CP recommendation to approve?
It's been moved and seconded. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Any, excuse me, I apologize. Any speakers in favor of the CPC recommendation to approve? No speakers, Mr. Mayor?
It's been moved and seconded. Did you want to speak? I'm sorry. What item do you want to, David? Can you? Yeah.
And I didn't hear the motion.
Okay, we'll get you now. Appreciate you being here. Ms. Salazar made the motion.
I made it to close public hearing and approve the item.
And second, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? The record will also show that there were 12 people present. All voted in favor, therefore meeting the three-quarters requirement. Item 51.
Item number 51 is a public hearing regarding an application for and an ordinance granting a specific use permit for installation of a non-premise district activity video board on a property in an area bound by Eckerd Street, Main Street, Commerce Street, and Irvay Street.
Moved and seconded. Speakers.
Are there any individuals in the audience that would like to speak in opposition of the CPC recommendation to approve? Any speakers in opposition? Any speakers in favor of the CPC recommendation to approve the item? No speakers, Mr. Mayor.
It's been moved and seconded. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed to Order 52?
Item number 52 is a public hearing regarding the application for and approval of a fill permit and removal of the floodplain prefix from 1.98 acres of 8.92 acres of land located at 903 Shadyside Lane within the floodplain of Stream 5B9, a tributary of White Rock Creek. Are there any citizens in the audience that would like to speak on the item that was just read into the record? Any speakers on the item that was just read into the record? No speakers, Mr. Mayor.
All right. Is there a motion to approve? Ms. Hunt, I'm sorry.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I just have a question of city staff, a technical question about fill permits. Will this fill permit exacerbate flooding in this area?
No, ma'am. The floodplain regulations have a no adverse impact requirement, and the criteria are designed for us to review to make sure that it won't make.
Can you speak into the microphone, please? Pull the microphone up to you.
The criteria are designed to make sure that a fill permit does not have an adverse impact on any other properties up or downstream.
Move to approve.
All right, it's been moved to second. All in favor? Aye. Opposed? Madam Secretary.
Item number 53 will require two votes, and it must be approved before items 54 and 55 can be approved. Item number 53 is a public hearing on substantial amendment number 2 to the fiscal year 2009-2010 consolidated plan for the reprogramming of number 1, 2006-2007 Community Development Block Grant reprogramming funds from Downtown Mortgage Association Program to Bedstar Street Mixed-Use Project in the amount of $475,800 and Reconstruction Share Program in the amount of $1,474,200. And number 2, 2009-2010 Home Investment Partnership Program grant funds from Reconstruction Share Program to Bedstar Street Mixed-Use Project, $1,346,200. And at the close of the hearing, authorize final adoption of substantial amendment number 2 to the fiscal year 2009-10 consolidated plan.
Are there any speakers in the audience that would like to speak on the item that was just read into the record? Any speakers on item number 53?
Ms. Crenshaw.
You will be allowed 2 minutes to speak, sir. Thank you.
Marvin Crenshaw, 5134 on Malcolm X Boulevard. I was going to the store last night. Someone stopped me, one of the people who live in the area. I didn't see it until then. And showed, told me this was going to be on the agenda. In fact, they had a copy of an agenda. Question I'm going to ask is that, when you get to 54 and 55, are you going to discuss anything about this, or are you just going to approve it if you approve 53?
We're going to stay focused on 53 prior to getting to 54 and 55. I'm sure it may be some related discussion.
All right, then I'll wait for you. All right.
Ms. Davis? Any other speakers? Ms. Davis?
I see here that they have a District R, but this is a District 7 project. I would like to move approval of the Bear Street mixed use.
Second.
All right, it's been moved by Ms. Davis, second by Mr. Atkins and Mr. Salazar. Are you closing the public hearing?
I'm closing the public hearing.
Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? All right, Madam Secretary.
Item number 54 is authorized number 1, an amendment to resolution number 07-3305 to increase the economic development loan amount from $300,000 to $550,000 with Kaminsky Holdings, Inc., and change the terms to allow $150,000 to be forgivable over a 5-year period and $400,000 to be repaid over 20 years with 3% interest for construction development financing for the commercial portion of a mixed-use building at 5208 Bexar Street, and number 2, a housing development loan agreement with Kaminsky Holdings, Inc., in the amount of $550,000 for construction of 6 affordable rental house units at 5208 Bexar Street as part of a mixed-use building.
Go ahead, put 55 in reference.
Item number 55 is authorized number 1, an amendment to resolution number 091924 to increase the economic development loan amount from $455,000 to $530,800 and change the terms to a 5-year forgivable loan with Hightog Enterprises, Inc. for pre-development costs and development financing for the construction of the retail component of a mixed-use building at 5203 Bexar Street, and number 2, a housing development loan agreement with Hightech Enterprises, Inc., in the amount of $796,200 for the construction of 9 affordable rental housing units at 5203 Bexar Street as part of the mixed-use building.
Mr. Newman, do you want to begin?
Yes, thank you, Mayor. Mr. Killingsworth, please. The Fair Street Initiative was briefed at the Quality of Life, not this particular item, but the whole progress of the Fair Street Initiative was briefed at our Quality of Life Committee this week, and I think it's making great, great strides. Tell me, what's the dollar amount of city participation in this encompassing project? Is there a number on it?
Are you talking about Bayer, the north side of the Bayer project, south side of the Bayer project?
Combined. Is there a number?
Yes, sir, but I don't know what that number is just offhand.
Okay, would you subsequently come back?
Yes, I think it was in the briefing that,
Quality of Life?
Code. Had it in their briefing that they gave the Quality of Life.
Actually, that's what spurred the question subsequent to that meeting about the dollar amount. Because if the manager would give that back, I'm interested in. I think it's positive, good progress. I'm just interested in the total dollars that we're spending on that project. Jerry, I sent you some information about changing of the terms, going to transitioning to a forgivable loan. That's the second thing. And this mayor actually addresses both of the issues, 54-55, so it's the same question applying both items. The staff is asking the city to become, to change the terms here to forgivable loans because?
A couple of things have happened. When the loans for both 54 and 55 were approved in prior years, this was going to be the city's gap portion of the loan.
but they were for
the development of the two projects. And as you know, what has happened over the last year and a half to 2 years, projects can't get done. You can't get the financing. So in this case, we're becoming both the gap provider, and we're becoming the bank. We're becoming the first lender. We're taking the position that a bank would normally take. And that's why on item 53, we had to move money out of the downtown MAP program that was not being used to help provide this lending opportunity so that these two projects could be built and go forward. So that's a long way of saying there are multiple pieces of this, because there's CDBG money involved and there's home money involved. There's certain things that you can do with CDBG money that you can't do with home money, and certain things you can do with home money you can't do with CDBG. So we've had to do multiple loans that take care of the first floor activity, which is the retail slash office part, which uses home funds and CDBG funds, and the upper floors, which are the residential pieces that are using home funds. And we set the loans, the repayable loans, at what the projects could repay with a typical coverage ratio, loan to debt coverage ratio. And so the forgivable portions are the equity that the city is putting into the deal.
It's a 5-year, what you're proposing is a 5-year term, correct?
Yes, sir.
Does that mean that the project will be completed by the end of 5 years, prior to the 5 years? Or
no, sir. The two projects, one of them, well, either one of the projects, the construction on it ought to be completed in 12 to 14 months. And then there is a 5-year compliance period for those projects as it burns off the forgivable portion of the loan, so that they have to be in compliance with certain requirements, such that they have to rent to affordable people at below 80% of median income.
Are those our standards or HUD standards?
HUD
combination?
It's HUD standards, because it's HUD money that we're using.
But not in this, including this reprogrammed money. It's HUD money.
Yes, sir.
Okay. Is there a criteria as it relates to measuring the occupancy of the residential and the retail portion? Or, again, is that all part of the HUD requirements? I'm supportive of this. I could be supportive of this. Well, on the face of it, I'm concerned anytime we go to forgivable loans. Okay, I as a councilman, can get beyond that component if I see there's sufficient safety net in to make sure it's a viable and where the city secured, and as it relates to the forgivable loan, and it's a viable entity, and we have a criteria in place to measure that success. That's going in. I want to make sure there's criteria in place.
Yes, sir. There's criteria in place. The forgivable loan is going to have a subordinated lien, just like because it is the city's equity, and that's how we use this federal money, as additional equity in order to buy down really the cost of these projects to where they can cash flow. And so we'll be in a subordinated lien position. The burn-off requirements there have to do with performance, non-financial performance, and more performance associated with who they are serving.
Understand, and I'm fine with, as long as there's measurements of criteria, so that a year or 2 years from now that they're properly measured, because the reality is, we as a council, this issue comes to the council, we're going to probably prove it today, and we'll move on down the road, and we may or may not ever hear about whether this project or another project meets those criteria or not. So at the front end, I just want to be an advocate to make sure that we have criteria in place so that we have a measurement of success.
Yes, sir. And the fact is that if we do not meet the requirements of HUD as it relates to the services that are going to be performed, that project goes down the tube. The council's going to hear about it because it'll come back because that's money you have to repay. Now, fortunately, in housing, in 8 years, we haven't had to repay any money.
That's a good thing.
That's a good thing.
Thank you, Mayor.
Thank you very much. Ms. Davis, please.
Thank you, Mayor. First of all, Jerry, I want to thank you for being creative with the very little money we have. You've been very, very creative on the Bear Street project. You've been very, very creative on this deal, and that's what it takes, some creativity, and I want to thank you for that. But also, I also want to say, I don't think this is going to fail. It's going to work. And that community needs it. It's a busy community down there. It looks totally different than it did 10 years ago. So I'm totally in support of this project for the Bear Street area. We still have a long ways to go in that area. We have some other issues, and we was briefed in the quality of life about Bear Street, making it a part of the quality of life for that whole area. And so we're taking baby steps, and this is a baby step right now that we're taking to deal with the issue down on Bear Street. So with this, I move for approval.
Thank you. Motion. Motion and second. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Any opposed? The second is Ms. Hill.
We need to.
I'm sorry, Mr. Salazar.
Thank you.
Okay. Madam Secretary, 19, please.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Addendum number 19 is a public hearing regarding an application for and an ordinance granting an amendment to the conditions for the Subdistrict 4A and 4B portions of Plan Development District Number 714, the West Commerce Street Fort Worth Avenue Special Purpose District, in an area generally bounded by both sides of Fort Worth Avenue between Bahama Drive and Colorado Boulevard.
Mr. Mayor, within 298 notices, property owners within 503 their request received 179 replies in favor and 5 replies in opposition. We'll require a simple majority to approve this. It is a designated zoning case.
Are there any individuals in the audience that would like to speak in opposition of the CPC recommendation to approve this item? Any speakers in opposition? Are there any speakers in favor of the CPC recommendation to approve? No speakers, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you. Mr. Newman, please.
Thank you, Mayor. Council members, this is the Live Reunion Project on Fort Worth Avenue, bounded by Hampton to the Hampton on one side. Very positive continued development. The Planning Commission, myself, the Planning Commissioner, has met with the developer involved and the neighbor to the north with Stevens Park Village and for the Wedgley community, the Indigo Wedgley Manor, Place, Creek, Townhomes. And as you can see in the neighborhood response, I'm 179 in favor, 5 in opposition, a very positive thing as we move forward. So I'm very pleased to be able to continue the redevelopment within Oak Cliff. Very positive thing. Therefore, Mayor, I move to close the public hearing in item Z089-254 and follow the City Plan Commission recommendation for approval with the following changes. In Subdistrict 4A and 4B, a business school, commercial amusement inside, furniture store, nursery, garden shop, or plant sales, and a theater must be parked in accordance with use regulations in Division 51A 4.200. And in Subdistrict 4A, at least one parking space per residential unit must be located on the same building site as the residential unit. Any additional required parking spaces must be located on a building site in Subdistrict 4A and within 200 feet of the building site that contains the residential use, and in Subdistrict 4A, all required parking for retirement housing use must be located on the same building site as the retirement housing use. I so move.
It's been moved and seconded.
These amendments that I'm putting forward this morning have been briefed to the applicant, Mayor, and the applicants in favor of them. This is some minor adjustments post-planning commission that I think will further strengthen the development.
Appreciate that. Thank you very much. Mr. Atkins, please.
I guess, Dave, just a couple of questions. This application request will address various standards. Is there less standards for the last? Are you familiar with that? The various standards of this project?
Yes, sir.
We've thoroughly reviewed them, and then the Plan Commission also had a pretty extensive briefing on them and ultimately recommended approval. And as mentioned, we've tweaked a few other parking conditions just to make the building work.
What are the approvals?
In terms of the intent of the development is to create a mixed-use project that would allow for a mixture of retail and residential uses, multifamily uses primarily, with possibility of townhouse uses on the north side of Fort Worth Avenue there as well, and to encourage a mixture of uses by providing certain parking breaks that would help facilitate that type of development.
Okay. Just another question is, number one, the developer who is invested in this project, is the same developer is invested in another project in that particular area?
I don't know for sure.
Yes.
Yeah, already under construction.
Well, I understand
the retirement.
Yes. But my question is that we got a major developer is in two major projects, and they got finance interest in both projects. Is that a fair statement?
I would suppose so, yes, sir.
Dave, could you address that, please?
Mayor, can I?
Yes.
Well, the applicants here, someone from the applicant
could speak first person
on it, Mr. Atkins, that'd be best.
Right.
Or representative of the applicant.
Mayor, Council, thank you.
Will you state who you are, please?
Pardon me?
Can you state who you represent?
Yes, I'm getting there. David Krukel with Lowry Union Town Center, 1030 North Clinton Avenue, Dallas, Texas, 75208. I work for the developer. The owner of the property, and we're developing La Reunion Town Center. I'm happy to answer any questions, but I didn't quite follow your question.
My question is that you are an investment in both projects, right? Is that correct?
Correct.
And what percentage of which project?
Well, I representing the owner is currently building the Fairways at La Reunion, which is the 198-unit senior retirement housing community. Which is out of the ground right now. We'll be opening the doors in the next couple of weeks.
Could you speak on what percentage you own?
They own 100%.
100% of that project. What about this project?
The Orleans at La Reunion, which will be the south side of Fort Worth Avenue. The owner will own 100%.
So you own both projects?
Yes.
And the north side, too.
And the north side.
Well, I'm just trying to make sure that with caution that we got an investor who owns two major projects, and I'm trying to make sure the liability there, make sure they can go forward. If one project fails, do the other project keep going? And I guess, Dave, we have a developer who owns two major projects, 100%. What happens if one project fails? Did he still go to the second project and finish that project?
Yes, sir. I mean, basically, again, when we're kind of talking about land use on the zoning side of things, the zoning isn't impacted by the ownership of the land at all. It's really more of a financial question from the developer's perspective, but there will be nothing prevent him and the zoning.
Well, what about from the city? What about from the city's perspective?
I think property ownership changes all the time within the city. When one applicant comes in, makes an application for zoning, that ownership changes. But from the city's perspective, I think you'd still have that just natural transition. If one project has financial difficulties, then you move to a new financing scheme, new owners.
But it would be the same owner. That's my concern.
I understand. And I guess it really is kind of straying away, in my perspective, from the land use part of it that the zoning is dealing with. And there may be other aspects of it that would be a concern with.
And I'm not sure there's an answer to your question. I think it'd probably be a question of circumstances and that sort of thing.
I don't know.
Jerry, you might want to ask if from the term, the agreements of it, there's anything that
yeah, that's why I'm trying to obligate.
I don't know. I don't think it would. Project versus project. There could be something within a project.
I didn't hear the original question.
Mayor made a statement. Go ahead, Mayor.
Well, in the two projects, is there anything in the agreements in either of those that gives the city any type of obligations or any protections if any individual project should go down?
Well, we have a collateral interest in which projects are we talking
Orleans.
About? Which La Reunion project?
Orleans.
The Orleans
Orleans. Well, the Fairways is under construction, and it's starting the leasing process soon, okay, which is the senior housing, which is off
well,
the Bahamas.
Well, right now, we will have a subordinated lien on the property, so we have a property interest in the property that has a considerable amount of equity, at least on paper, in the land value.
Let me jump in. There's no cross-collateralization. That's what I'm getting at. There's no cross-collateralization between the two properties. Yeah, that's where I'm going.
Oh, okay.
As far as we're concerned, they're not cross-collateralized. They're single entities.
They are?
So if one went down, one went, they'd be handled at that time, however, to be truthful,
by
with you,
whoever
the creditors would want to have a hammer.
Yes. Is that correct?
It'd be up to creditors. Yes.
I just want to make sure.
No, it's fair. I hope that helps. Ms. Davis, please.
Thank you, Mayor. Jerry, can you step at the front? Now, I'm looking at this, and this is in Day's district. Is this all the subject that we get on this particular item? Is this it, the four lines of subject? It doesn't have a whole lot of history.
I'm sorry. I'm being...
I know. This is a zoning issue, but it doesn't have a whole lot of history on it. Just a small, brief paragraph.
You want me to give you a little history on what the deal is?
Okay, what's the deal?
Okay, this was the old... sir?
The deal.
The history.
The
Colorado Place Apartments was about 450 units built back in the 50s on both sides of Fort Worth Avenue. We are in the process right now of demolishing all of those and are right at the tail end of that. What is planned is about a five-phase development, of which the first phase has been under construction between 9 months and a year now for a seniors project, 200-plus unit seniors project. The second phase of this was a mixed-use La Reunion Orleans project that is part of the footprint for the money that we left for the tear down of those houses. It has a 20 or 30 1,000 square feet of retail on it, and I don't know, it's 150 plus.
Is any city money being used? Because I want to make sure we're using the best, we're doing what's right with city money.
Yes, ma'am. So far, we loaned the developers $1 million of Proposition 8 bond money to complete the demolition, and it was a loan, payback. That loan will be due in the next 12 months.
Okay.
And we have liens on the property, so they can't move forward with going vertical with the developments without dealing with our underlying loan at this point.
Which would be a lien going into a construction loan.
That's right.
Okay.
And the Orleans project right now, we do not, there is a TIF reimbursement associated with that. Project in order to gap fund that Orleans project.
Is there any 108 money being used?
Not in Orleans, but in the project across the street, which was a tear down of some more units, the units on the north side of the street. And that is the Courtyard project, and it will have some 108 money involved in it.
What would be the total amount of this project?
$200 million plus.
Oh, it's a major, it's a five-phase project that will have around 200,000 square feet of retail and about 1,000 units.
If I remember the numbers, it's $200 million plus. It will be the centerpiece of Fort Worth Avenue and that whole TIF corridor.
And it will be almost similar to the Bear Street. The same amount, you know, almost
$200 million. I should end up with more square footage.
I agree. Okay. Thank you so much.
And I would just reiterate $200 million, as you said, Mr. Newman. This whole area, $200 million, this whole area really is what your hope is to have redevelopment in that entire area.
Yes,
right. Okay. Ms. Salazar, please.
Just real quick, on the motion that was approved, I guess, by the Plan Commission, it talks about deleting the amenities. Can you clarify what amenities are being deleted, which was for what qualifies as a mixed-use district?
I'm sorry, what amenities?
Yeah, page 6 of 25 under the applicant's request. Delete the amenity for what qualifies as a mixed-use district. Can you clarify what that means?
Can you talk about the weight room and that sort of thing, Dave?
I'm sorry, which page were you looking at, sir?
I'm looking at the motion from CPC.
Oh, okay.
I mean,
it's about a bill of the car prior.
It's on number one.
Mm-hmm.
Page 6 of 25 under the applicant's request, delete the amenity for what qualifies as a mixed-use district. What amenities we're talking about and what the significance is of why do we have to delete that? Looking at prior action CPC, I think.
Yeah, that's what I'm looking at.
It said a maker, an answer, and a second is a hard day.
Right.
At the bottom of the page.
What amenities are we deleting?
Right. I think the bottom line on this affected sub-district, the sub-district on the north side of Fort Worth Avenue, the attempt was to make sure that the whole project was looked at as a whole, but since our mixed-use projects are typically based lot by lot, was that the amenities of the development, which would be a residential development on the north side of Fort Worth Avenue, could be included to meet that mixed-use requirement. Typically, we may not include a leasing office or a recreational area that was, say, a small gym associated with multifamily development as crediting towards the mixed-use project. But since we're really looking at this as a whole, the retail on the south side as well, that was a way of coming into compliance with the mixed-use project requirement in terms of certain parking breaks and other things. So the amenities were intended to count towards the non-residential portion of the development.
But by eliminating the amenities, what impact does that have?
Well, in eliminating, again, I'm sorry, I still hadn't found the exact wording we were referencing. Delete the amenities for what qualifies as a
Do you know, Dave? I'm a little lost at where you're going, Mr. Salazar.
Well, I'm just asking
the amendment. Are you on page 4 of the CPC recommendation?
Yeah.
It says motion, and then it has a 1, and then it goes to page 625 under the applicant's request. Delete the amenities for what qualifies as a mixed-use district. What does that mean?
What's the staff's definition, or Mr. Crowley, what's the definition of amenities for this?
I'm just trying to get to the mixed-use project portion of the...
I don't think we really did the whole briefing.
But a zoning case is not briefed to a committee.
Well, okay, then we can refer to the business and economic development so we can really understand what we're voting on. I mean, the issue here is that we have to understand what we're going to vote on.
It's not economic amenity. It's zoning land use deal.
I know. So far, no one's been able to explain it. That's my point.
30 seconds. Carl Crawley, 900 Jackson Street. See, when in our proposal, we had considered, as David said, about to qualify as a mixed use, to allow a leasing office and amenities, in this case amenities would be, as David said, a gym or something, to be counted as a non-residential use to qualify for mixed use. The Planning Commission had an issue with the word and amenities, because amenities could be a laundry room, and that's not really an amenity. So we struck it out, and we didn't have any problem with striking it out. So now the only thing that can count towards that mixed use is the sales and leasing office. That would be considered a non-resident use. The amenities were always going to be built.
Yeah. Okay.
It was just caught up and amenities the word so that you couldn't get credit for the washateria as a non-resident.
It narrowed the eligibility as opposed to widened it.
Oh, yeah.
Narrowed it.
Yeah, and we never really considered a washroom as a amenity or a non-resident.
Okay, still in the same paragraph. Don't go too far, Carl. It says in there regarding the Fort Worth Avenue right-of-way, I guess there's a plan that's going to be brought back to the council. Has that plan been drawn up?
Yes, that exhibit I think that's in the your handouts, or at least for the ordinance. Cool. I got it in there.
Okay. And then my last thing is you talked about the leasing office, and the change that they're asking is that the leasing office space be also seen as a counting towards business space mixed use.
Right. You can't do standalone multifamily, just pure 100% multifamily. And on the north side, it's a real skinny sort of strip, which doesn't really tend itself to much in the way of mixed use. So the idea is there will be some mixed use, there's some retail type stuff, and then the leasing office will count towards that minimum percentage so that then it can be a mixed use office.
Is there like a minimum size limit to the leasing office? I mean, I guess, being the lawyer that I am, I can see that, you know, you can say you have a 10,000 square foot leasing office and count that as your mixed use, you know, business space. You know, obviously it doesn't make economic sense, but sometimes, you know, people do things that don't make economic sense.
I don't think, how big a leasing office are you looking at? Yeah, the TIF has put some restrictions on how legally the TIF probably already said, hey, wait a minute, you can't have a 10,000 square foot leasing office.
Oh, okay. I mean, and, you know, because you know what I'm talking about, right?
Sure. It's a good idea. I'll write that one down.
For example, you got 10,000 square feet. You only need, say, less than 1,000 square feet for your leasing office, but you have tenants who want to come in, but you don't want them. So you just decide not to rent it to them because you've got...
Well, the likelihood of that, I guess you could do that.
Yeah. Or you know, you can't rent them, and to show that you're more occupied, you say, well, we got a 10,000 square foot leasing office.
Let's hope common sense would prevail.
Well, we hope. But I just wanted to make those clarifications. I hadn't, because at the beginning we talked about some changes, but it was never really explained what the change was. And I think these are significant changes, which I think Mr. Crowley, thank you very much for explaining, and makes perfect sense. So I appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you. Appreciate the clarification. Mr. Allen, please.
Yeah, I just going to just compliment both Councilman Salazar and Councilman Athens. Those were good questions and such, and I think worthy of, as we go forward with these type projects, to always look very deep into these type projects. So those were good questions, and we'll want to make sure we continue to look deep as we go forward.
Thank you. It's been moved and seconded. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? So ordered. That brings us to the close of our agenda. Madam Secretary, do we have speakers?
Yes, Mr. Mayor. We begin your afternoon speakers with Ozumba Lungs, followed by Gwen Wooten. I will first recite the speaker guidelines. Citizens and other visitors attending the meeting of the City Council shall observe the same rules of propriety, decorum, and good conduct applicable to members of the City Council. Any persons making personal, impertinent, profane, or slanderous remarks who become boisterous while addressing the City Council or while attending the City Council meeting shall be removed from the room if the sergeant-at-arms is so directed by the presiding officer, and the person shall be barred from further audience before the City Council during that session of the City Council. Again, individuals are allowed 3 minutes to speak. First speaker is Ozumba Lungs. Next speaker will be Gwen Wooten. Thank you. Go ahead, Mr. Lungs.
Council member, my name is Minister in Chief Ozumba Lungs, County for Council in Precinct 5. America and the City of Dallas don't hear us. Mr. Hopkins and I, you all don't hear us. But we're speaking about the infrastructure, contamination in our community's neighborhood, lead, asbestos, petroleum waste, fertilizer plants, etc. And also my arrest and abuse from the city and the county when I was defending my life in 2004, the justice I received was criminal. We have real problems that need addressing, but you ignore us as though we don't exist. You need to respond, and the issues we have need resolving. I was talking to quite a few young men that see me in different places, and he also talked to me about being able to, you know, get back into the working things after coming out from criminal justice for ex-convicts don't have, can't get jobs and things like this. I think we need to do something. Well, this is not only Dallas, this is all over. Because what are people going to do that can't work? But I know my Lord and Savior is real, and I tell you that Jesus do hear his elect and will destroy the will of Satan, the devil. And I would also possibly file a lawsuit against an organization in my community that are violating my rights and other members of my family rights in the community. You know, some things transpired. You know, we have certain rights to be within our rights, confinement to be private rights, and you should not ignore those rights. I talked to you all about that before. It's a big fan. I came down here with it, kind of joking, but it's serious because of my life. Since then, like I said, defending my life. I have about 8 signs in front of my house that says, no trespassing, keep off. And the utility people know that nobody allowed to come on my property but the gas man, the water man, and the electricity man. Anybody else, you know, you take a chance. And I take this very serious, but if people that don't know how to read, please, people, read these no trespassing, keep off property signs. No leases. No kind of literature. I have maybe 11 signs at the front of my house, probably 5 at the back of 6. You know, can you read? Thank you. God bless you all.
Thank you. Madam Secretary.
Your next speaker is Gwayne Wooten, not present. William Hopkins is the next speaker, followed by Joel Floyd.
My name is William Hopkins. This is Black History, and we talk about Martin Luther King and Malcolm X. I want to tell you about this black guy that I pray to, Tom. His name is Jesus. So Jesus, if I go by the Bible, if his hair was like lamb's wool or sheep wool when he was a baby, and then Jesus was an African American, he was a Negro. So I want to kick my shouts out to the guy that I pray to every night to keep my family and my friends and everybody that are close to me safe daily. So I was listening to y'all when y'all was talking about the city sanitation workers. Martin Luther King died helping the sanitation workers. He got murdered to help these poor people, poor minority people. And for what I heard y'all saying that they didn't need to work full time, and the mayor said they didn't need to work full time, and another white person said they might not want to. It's pitiful, man. I would sell crack before I worked for the city of Dallas. This is a pitiful place to work for. I'm just going on. If I was a city worker and listened to what y'all said about the sanitation workers today, I would quit my job and I would sell crack. I just on that. But what I want to talk to you about, Merrill, is Merrill Leopard. Tom, you and the guy in the purple shirt. Y'all busy? You busy right now? Want me to just take a break? I can take a break. I can sit down. You want me to sit down for a minute? To you and your wife, friend.
Your time to continue.
Time to continue. Okay. Louis Sepulveda told me that you told him that you was gonna help the blacks. Tom.
Thank you. Next speaker.
I was trying to wait. My time, the light's still green. I was trying to wait till you and your friend get through talking, man. You disrespect the shit out of me every time I come down here.
You're free to continue to talk, sir.
I don't care about you like that. Wait, why don't you say something to him? Why don't you say something to the white man? He over there disrespecting me here. You
want
to say nothing to him? But you don't like my message.
That concludes your speaker.
Thank you very much. We're adjourned.
Meeting adjourned at 206.